ಜಯಂ ಶುಪಾಲ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಶಿವರಾಜಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಕ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಪಂಚವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ
ಕೀ ಜಯ
ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಣ ವಿಶ್ವಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತಕ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ
ಕೀ ಜಯ
ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದ
ಕೀ ಜಯ
ರಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದ
ಕೀ ಜಯ
ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪಗೋವಿನಾದ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾಮುಂಡ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನ ವೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮ ಕಿ ಮಾಯಾಪುರ ಧಾಮ ಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ ಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ ಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ ಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿ ಕಿ ಯಮುನಾ ಮಾಯಿ ಕಿ ತುಳಸಿ ದೇವಿ ಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ದೇವಿ ಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ಬೃಂದ ಕಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಓ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುಗ್ಲೋರಿಸ್ ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಣೆ ದುರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶದ ಹರಿಣಿ
ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ
ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ 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 ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ
ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೆ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧೇ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹ ಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಮುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವಾನ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಶ್ರೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾ ನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವ ಸಾಗರೆ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯಾ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೈನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯದಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋಸ್ತವ ಜಾಯದೇ ತದಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾಥಸ್ತ್ವಂ ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಭಾವ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖ ಶಮನ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ವರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯ ಸಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿದರದಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯೇಷ್ವಭಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾತ್ ತೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೃದಯ ಆದಿಗವಯೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಲ್ ಸೂರಯ ತೇಜೋವಾರಿಮೃತಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷಾ ದಾನಾಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತಕುಹಕಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ವರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜಿತ ಕೈಲವೋತ್ರ ವರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮತ್ಸರಾಣಂ ಸದಾ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾಪತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂವಾಪರೈರೀಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯವರುಧ್ಯದೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿಭಿ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷುಭಿ ತಕ್ಷಣಾಲ್ ನಿಗಮಕಲ್ಪತರೋರ್ಗಲಿದಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಕಮುಖಾದಮೃತದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುಧಂ ವಿಪದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಹುರಹೋರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಕಾಃ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋತ್ಪತ್ತ್ಯಾದಿಹೇತವೇ ತಾವತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರಪ್ರಜಂತಮನುಭೇದಮಭೇದಕೃತ್ಯಂ ಐವಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಗಾಧರಮಜುಹಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿ ತನ್ಮಯದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಮಾನುತೋಸ್ಮಿ ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲ ಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರಮೇಘಂ ಅಧ್ಯಾಲ್ಪದೀಪಮದಿದಿದೀರ್ಷದಾಂಗಮೂಂಧಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಃ ಪುರಾಣಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನುಮುಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಂ ಮುನೀಯಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರಮುಗ್ಧಮೂರ್ತೇ ಕಳವೇಣು ಕುಣಿತಾವೃತಾನನೇಂದೋಃ ಮಮ ವಾಚಿ ವಿಜೃಂಭತಾಂ ಮುರಾರೇ ಮಧುರಿನ ಕಣಿಕಾವಿ ಕಾವಿ ಕಾವಿ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೇ श्रीमदे भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे श्रीमल गुरु चरणारविंदाभ्यां नमः वंदे नंद व्रज स्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्णशा यासं हरिगदोद्गीतं पुनादि भुवनत्रयं गोपी चरणारविंद प्रमाणवे नमः पीतांबरं करविराजित चक्रशंखं कौमोदकी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधा सहायमति सुंदर मंदहासं वातालयेश मनीषं हृदि भावयामि कोमलं कुजयन् वेणुं श्यामलोयं कुमारक वेदवेद्यपरं ब्रह्म भासदां पुरतो मम मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयरे गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीकृष्णाय नमः श्रीमदिराधियाये नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनं गोविन्द गोविन्द ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवदां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिदां पुराण मुनिना मध्ये महाभारतं अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्बत्वामनुसन्ददामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणि नमोऽस्तु ते व्यास विशाल बुद्धे उल्लारविन्दायुधपत्र नेत्र येन त्वया भारत तैल पूर्ण प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रदीप प्रपन्न पारिजाताय तोत्र वेत्रैक बाणये ज्ञान मुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नम सर्वोपनिषदो गावोदोद्धा गोपाल नन्दन पार्थो वल्स सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महद् वसुदेव सुदं देवं कंसच्चानूरमर्दनं देवगी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं भीष्मद्रोणतटा जयद्रथजला गान्धार नीलोल्पल शल्यग्राहवदी कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनि सोतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरण नदी कैवर्तक केशव पाराशर्यवजःसरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानगकेसरं हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितं लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः प्रदीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजकलिमलप्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यल्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दि दिव्यैस्तवैर्वेदैः साङ्गपदैः क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरा सुरगणैः देवाय तस्मै नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनं गोविन्द गोविन्द So, today we will discuss this one verse in the 12th canto, 13th chapter, the 15th verse. The verse is Sarvavedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasam Amrita Tuptasya Na Anyatra Radhil Kochil Na Anyatra Anyatrasya Radhi Kochil. This is the verse. You sit down, Naveen. Let it be. If you keep moving all the time, it gets a little bit distractions. And this is a topic requires attention, because you won't understand otherwise. If your mind is going here, there, everywhere. Because the reason why I chose this verse is, sometimes we think Bhagavatam is very simple. Bhagavatam is not simple. Why it's not simple? That's what this verse is saying. Why Bhagavatam is not simple? So, the thing is that glorifying Bhagavatam at the very end by Sudha Goswami, he's saying here that Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyate. It's a very profound statement it is. Vedam, Upanishads, Puranam, Itihasam, and so on and so forth. So much literature, Vedic literature. He's saying here, Sudha Goswami is saying, Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyate. He says it is the essence of everything. And to understand that, why it is the essence, it's important. Without knowing that, you won't understand why Bhagavatam is so important. This is why, that for those who are following Sanatana Dharma, that is our, the mother of everything, isn't it? All Dharmam comes from that. Sanatana Dharmam is the name, title given to it by the rishis. Sanatana Dharmam. That is the origin of everything. So, for Sanatana Dharmam, those who are following Sanatana Dharmam, their authority is Vedam. Vedam is their authority. For them, absolute authority is Vedam. There is no question about that. It is on that basis all the great personalities have written their commentaries, written their other literature, whatever they have compiled, they have preached and propagated everything, whether it is starting from Shankaracharya, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of them, except Vedam is the authority, the first thing, right? Once it so happened in a lecture, a question came up like this, that is Shruti Gita spoken anywhere in the Vedam? Because Shruti Gita is in the Bhagavatam, 87th chapter in the 10th canto, is Shruti Gita, isn't it? So, is there anything spoken, what does Shruti Gita means? Personified Vedas glorifying Krishna, isn't it? That is Shruti Gita, which we will discuss during the Christmas break. That will be the topic we'll cover. So, this Shruti Gita, what is so important in the Bhagavatam, I mentioned before also, if you can explain Shruti Gita, Bharadarahugana Samvadam, Kapila Maharshi's teachings, and Ekadasha Skandam. If these four things, if you have absorbed properly, you can say more or less you understand what Bhagavatam is saying. Bhagavatam is a very, very difficult subject. People who have studied Srimad Bhagavatam for a whole lifetime, they are saying, I have not understood what Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying. We say so many things that this is what Bhagavatam is saying, that's what Bhagavatam is saying. Exactly what Vedavyasa Maharshi is trying to tell us through Bhagavatam. People who have studied Srimad Bhagavatam for 3,000-4,000 times in life, they are saying at the end, I have not understood what Vedavyasa is trying to say. That is how difficult it is, Bhagavatam. So here, whatever it is, this question came up. Is Shruti Gita spoken anywhere discussed in the Vedam, right? So, because the reason for asking that question, this was in a very nice discussion when it was happening, this question came up. Shruti Gita discussed in the Vedam anywhere. So the reason for that is, generally we have to have an idea of the Vedam, how Vedam works. What is in the Vedam, isn't it? So, let's have a little bit talk about Vedam first. And then from Vedam, you will know how Bhagavatam has come from that. Yeah. So, Vedam has got these four departments in the Vedam. Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. Like Varnashrama Dharmam, they have divided Brahmachari, Grahastan, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam. In the same way, Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. Right? This is whole different approach it is. It's not just like the way we give one book to somebody, one Bhagavatam book, English translation purport, and say, now you follow Vedic philosophy. It's not so simple. It's not that simple, unfortunately. It is quite complex. And when you'll understand that, how Vedam Bhagavatam has come, and if you really want to go in depth in Bhagavatam, you need to know this background. Otherwise, it's difficult, right? So, today's class, you may have to hear once or twice more to get a grip with that, to understand that this is such an important topic in the literature. right? So many people have this misunderstanding. Vedam means a Samhita, right? But actually Vedam is not only Samhita. Vedam has got Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. These four words you have to remember. There is no English translation for these things. They are all the way it is. The Vyasa Maharshi has given the title to that, right? So, in Shruti Gita, what is actually spoken in Shruti Gita? Shruti Gita talks about only what is discussed in the Upanishads. It doesn't touch anything from the Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam. Only what is discussed in the Upanishad is discussed in the Shruti Gita. That is how Upanishads and Shruti Gita is so close to it, each other, like that, right? So, and this particular thing, Shruti Gita, what you find in the Bhagavatam, you don't find in any other Purana. Like the way Shruti Gita has been introduced in the Bhagavatam, as a summary of Upanishads, you don't find it in any other 17 Puranams what Vedavyasas written. That is one special feature of the Bhagavatam. For some reason, whatever that Vedavyasa had been in his mind when he wrote Bhagavatam, he had decided to bring Upanishads into Bhagavatam through Shruti Gita. That's what he has done, right? So, this is a speciality of Bhagavatam first. Now, here, you see, do you see the word what he has written there? Sarva Veda Andasaram, he, Shri Bhagavatam Ishyade, right? So, he is saying, first there is Vedam. Then there is Vedandam. And then there is Vedandasaram. Isn't it? First there is Vedam. And then there is the end of Vedam, the knowledge in the Vedam is Vedandam. And then the essence of that knowledge is Vedandasaram. So, Suda Goswami is saying here, Sarva Vedandasaram, he, Shri Bhagavatam Ishyade. Bhagavatam is that Vedandasaram, he is saying. How did that happen? That's what we are going to talk about today. So, if you understand this, you have understood Bhagavatam. That Vedam, Vedandam, Vedandasaram. You know what that means. Vedam is there. Vedanta means the end of knowledge. Vedandasaram means the essence of the end of knowledge. Vedam, Vedantam, Vedandasaram. So the Suva Goswami is saying, Sarva Vedandasaram, he Shri Bhagavatam Ishyade. Right? So, when we say, Sarva Vedandasaram, he Shri Bhagavatam Ishyade, how do we understand that? Why? Because if you have got that, then you have understood Bhagavatam. It is a Sarva Vedanta Saram. Then you have understood Bhagavatam. This understanding is two different ways. Understanding Bhagavatam is two different ways. One, that you heard Bhagavatam from beginning to end. And you have been very attentively listening to it, right? And sometimes you may feel that I have heard everything and I have understood it. You may say like that. I have understood Bhagavatam, right? And they will say like that, I have read through Bhagavatam, I have understood Bhagavatam. This is one method of knowing. That means it has come to your mind. You have got it into your mind, right? So, but while writing Srimad Bhagavatam, this was not in Vedavyasa Maharshi's mind. Vedavyasa Maharshi's mind was, after you have studied Bhagavatam, you have to know Krishna. That is the other understanding of Bhagavatam. First understanding is knowing all the verses, translations, commentaries, purports, this, that, everything. That's one thing. But Vedavyasa is saying that through Bhagavatam, you have to get Krishna in the heart. So if you have got Krishna in the heart, then you have understood Bhagavatam, as far as Vedavyasa is concerned. So, this is the two levels in which you understand Bhagavatam. One, through understanding the verses, translation, purports, and word-by-word meaning, and everything like that, like just like a scholar will study Bhagavatam. But second thing is more important, that after studying Srimad Bhagavatam, have you got some understanding of Krishna, some feeling for Krishna, some experience of Krishna? That is what is called it as Bhagavata Rasamalayam. Muhuraho Rasiga Bhuvi Bhavuga, he says. This is what he is referring to. That have you caught Krishna inside after studying all Srimad Bhagavatam? Or is it just still academic understanding of the verses and the books, right? So, so understanding Bhagavatam means able to establish Krishna within the heart. Able to have Krishna within the heart. Only then you can say that you have got Bhagavatam. Otherwise you can't say. Just by knowing a few things here and there, or even if you remember all the 18,000 verses, still you can't say you have got Bhagavatam. You can only say you got Bhagavatam if Krishna is experienced within the heart. The experience of Krishna, because this is Krishna, Bhagavatam is Krishna. So the proper way to say that you got Bhagavatam means you got Krishna in the heart. Realization, right? So, and able to establish Krishna within the heart and able to feel that Krishna is present inside me, in the heart, right? So, so understanding Vedam means whatever Vedam has spoken about. Vedam has spoken about a subject. And if you are able to absorb it in the mind and able to feel that what Vedam is telling, you got to feel it inside, experience it inside, right? So, similarly with Srimad Bhagavatam also, knowing Bhagavatam means what is the topic what Bhagavatam is discussing about? And if you are able to get that into your own heart, then you can say that you have some relationship with Bhagavatam. Otherwise, you can never say that you have understood Bhagavatam. You have not understood Bhagavatam. That's what I'm saying. People who have read Bhagavatam, I'm just referring to Maliyu's story. He had read over 4,000 times in his life, Srimad Bhagavatam. And very before his death, not long ago, before his death, he left his body when he was about 95 or 96. And whole life he hasn't done anything else except studying Srimad Bhagavatam. And reading, thinking about it, reflecting on that. And when he met, just before he is leaving his body, somebody met him and asked him about it. And what his answer was, that I still do not know what Vedavyas is trying to say through Bhagavatam. This was the answer from him. And this, not only him, many others have said the same thing, who have spent lifelong studying Bhagavatam. From that you can understand how grave the topic is in the Bhagavatam, which we are trying to get to understand, right? So, so here, you have to come to that level that you have to experience Krishna within the heart after studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Then you can say that you have some understanding from the Bhagavatam, right? So, so in order to understand, here it said Vedanta Saram, isn't it? So to understand the Vedanta Saram, you have to first understand Vedam properly. What is this Vedam means, isn't it? So we can only discuss in one and a half hour so much about Vedam. Vedam is a big topic, right? But generally you know that Vedam has got these four divisions. Rig Vedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvana Vedam. We all know that, isn't it? The four Vedams. So, so these four divisions in the Vedam. Vedam originally is one, but that was divided into four. So when Vedavyasa Maharshi, right, decided to divide the Vedam, earlier I said in the Vedam, there is another way of dividing Vedam. How? Brahman, Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. That is one way of dividing the Vedam. Then we have Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvanavedam. You may think these are four different books. That's how our mind will think. Normally we are used to like that, isn't it? If he says one divided into four means four different books. That's not how it is. That's another difficulty here. What it means is that in the Vaidika language, Vaidika Bhasha, in Vedic language, when we talk about it, that Rika means scientifically, Krishna refers to that in the Bhagavatam also, that Chando Baddham, Chando Nibaddha Mandram, that means Vrittam. Vrittam means the meter. How in certain meters, and which are those meters that Krishna has spoken in the 11th canto? He will call it as Gayatri, Anushtupa, then Jagadi, Virad. All these names he has mentioned. Normally when people read, they won't take notice of all that. They will just see something beyond our world. So they'll just leave it like that, right? I think it is in the 1129 or something. 1119, I think. Somewhere. That he refers to these words, right? Anyway, remember this. Gayatri, Anushtupa, Jagati, Virat. These are the four vrittam. He has mentioned more vrittams there. The meter. Based on which this rigs are formed. Rigs. They are called rigs, right? Rigs are formed. Therefore, the Vedam, where they have used this way of assembling all the rigs together with the different meters, that is called Rigveda. All the rigs put together. And I will look for that verse and tell you which one that is. Krishna says in that Ekadasham, this thing. So, pulling together the Gayatri, Anushtupa, Jagati and Virad, this is all called Chandasa, the meter. It's called Chandasa. And they are all together brought together and that is called Riksa or Rigveda. Rigveda, right? And then, so Rigvedam is all Chandasa. Chandasa means it has got a structure. It has got a structure. And it has to be in that structure. And those who know Vedam or who have studied Vedam very well during childhood and trained like that, when somebody is reciting Vedam, they will know which Vedam it is. Immediately they will find out. They can tell you that by hearing the way they are reciting the Vedam. Okay. Then there are in the Vedam. Now, at this time, all are together. Everything is together. Right? So what Vedavyas did, he picked up all the rigs together from that and put them together and he called it as Rigvedam. This is how Rigvedam has come. Right? And then there are other things in the Vedam which is not structured like that. That means chando nibad, chandasa. It's not a chandasa. There is no meter or anything. It's written in a prose form and in verse form, but not following any particular rules like that. And those mantra, they're all mantra. All these riks are mantras, right? So these mantra, he compiled them together and he called it as yajasa. This was called rik first. This he called it as Yajasa, right? And then, so he pulled out all that together and put it together and said, this is Yajurvedam. This is Yajurvedam. Then, what else? Again, he looked at the whole Vedam. This all happened when Vedavyas came at the end of Dwapara Yugam and in the beginning of Kali Yugam. That was the time when Vedavyas was here. So, it is at that juncture between Dwapara Yugam and Kali Yugam, that is when Vedavyas did all these things. At the end of Dwapara Yugam, the beginning of Kali Yugam. Right? So then he looked into the Vedam again and he noticed that there is a lot of mantram which are recited as musical. Very musical mantram in there. He brought all of them together and he created a musical Vedam which is called Samaveda. So, Samavedam is very musical, Gana Almagam, they call it. means seeker. Right. So out of then balance is in the Atharva Veda, but Atharva Veda will come to that later before we go through these three things. Right. So there is another fourth Vedam called Atharvana Vedam. So we have got Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam, Sama Vedam and Atharvana Vedam. Right. So this whole four Vedams together is a massive literature. It's a massive thing it is, right? And it is very complex also. Very, very difficult to unravel this and to get the message from that. Impossible practically. Many people have tried and still you couldn't say that this is it about Vedam. It is that complex it is, right? And but Vedavyasa is the first personality who has done this in this way, structured it to make it easier. Prior to that, this was all together. Everything was together. And anyone who has taken to it, he will be completely baffled by that. But Vedavyasa, to make it easier in Kali Yugam, he divided them into four, like this, right? So it is possible that it may have happened before also, but we have no information. All we know is that in end of Dwapara Yugam and Kali Yugam, this has happened, right? So, so Vedavyasa Maharshi's, that is why, you know, Vedavyasa Maharshi's appearance day is celebrated as Guru Purnima everywhere. It is Vedavyasa is the actual Guru, and it is his appearance that is celebrated as Guru Purnima somewhere in the end of July or something it comes, right? So, why he is considered Guru? Because the word, he is the actual Guru. Guru means that Gu Rodhayadi Ru. Means that Gu means darkness. Darkness. Darkness means what? Ignorance. In us. Isn't it? We all have that. Plenty. So, darkness or ignorance in us, right, means what? Not knowing who we are. This is darkness. Not knowing who we are. We know that whatever we are projecting into the world as I am this or I am that, it's all false, isn't it? All based on the body. It has no meaning. Practically, if I say I am this or I am a man or this or that, it's all based on the body. And the body is not real. That's going to go. So Vedam is very clear on all these things. There's no doubt about these things in Vedam. That's how categorically they are saying this, that you are in darkness. We are in darkness, and that is a fact because of this. Right? So Gu, the word Guru, the Gu indicates that ignorance in us. What is present in us in the form of ignorance. And the person, Rodhayadi, Rodhayadi means one who destroys that darkness inside us, or that ignorance inside us, is called Guru. Is called Guru. So, Vedavyasa Maharshi, because in Vedam, he has taken out the message from there and compiled Veda literature from there. And that literature, what Vedavyasa has given us, by studying with that, what will happen? What will happen is, it will destroy that darkness inside us about our identity. That darkness will go, which is very thick inside. And that darkness will go by studying the literature from Vedavyas. And therefore, Sanatana Dharmam accepted Vedavyasa Maharshi as the original Guru. He is our Guru for everything. All other Acharyas, from Shankaracharya onwards, everybody goes to him. It is, he is the authority. Shankaracharya met him, Ramanuja met him, Madhvacharya met him. At least these three Acharyas have met him. It is in the record. At different places. Shankaracharya met him in Banaras, Ramanuja met him in Badrinath somewhere, Madhvacharya also met him in Banaras. And it is after their discussions that they wrote their commentaries on the Brahma Sutram and Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. So that is why basically those three commentaries, Shankaracharya's, Ramanuja's and Madhva's, is accepted as the foundation for Sanatana Dharmam because of their personal meeting with Vedavyas compared to others. Other Acharyas who have come later, they have also written commentaries, but there is no reference anywhere that they had meeting with Vedavyas about it. But whereas Shankaracharya, Ramanuja and Madhva had discussed with Vedavyas about their commentaries, and there is a discussion mentioned in their history also. So this is why they have a unique position in that way for what they have done for Sanatana Dharmam, right? So anyway, for us Vedavyas is the topmost authority because everything is coming from him. And he, not only that, he systematically made this Vedam in a structured way, because he knew very well that in Kali Yuga we will get people who will look, be very black and white, things. And maybe he had, actually you can see in Kali Yuga people's way of thinking and inability to reflect things properly, and everything has to be made in a user-friendly way, isn't it? To use the modern terminology, even Krishna's pastimes are made user-friendly now. When you see some of the video clips that's been coming in the last few days because of Janmashtami, they have made all the pastimes of Krishna with the little doll forms, and all the pastimes are there. Because pastimes, if you say now, people cannot relate with it. But if you see a picture, you can relate. So verses are not important, videos become more important. That's the way our mind, how much it has gone away from in the world. It has lost its ability to absorb things in a proper way. Anyway, so we have seen here that those mantram which are under Chandas, that is called Rigvedam, right? And similarly, prose verses, prose written in the Vedam is mostly Yajurvedam. And all the musical one is the Samavedam and then the Atharvana Vedam. Okay. So, how did Vedavyas bring it up like this? This is also an interesting thing, because Vedam is such a difficult thing. What was in his mind when he was dividing Vedam like this? It was not purely because it was musical, he took them into Samavedam, or purely because it was prose, it went to Yajurvedam. Pure it was Rig, it went to Rigvedam. He had other thoughts as well. See how thoughtful he was. You can understand that when you hear these things about the way he divided that. He looked at the Vedam and he understood that mainly Vedam, majority of it is Yagam, related to Yagam, isn't it? Sacrifices. You remember, throughout Tretayugam, Dwaparayugam and all, what was people doing? They were performing sacrifices. That's what you read in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Prajina Brahis, Pradhu Maharaj, Yudhishthira, and Ambarish, and Prajina, so many others. You'll go through the list, you'll find everybody was performing sacrifices. What does that indicate? Yagam is one of the main topics in the Vedam. At that time, Yagam was. Now we are in Kali Yugam. We say, this is the only way. Now we say. But then, those days, they were not saying like that. This is the only way. Mainly, they were saying, Yagam is the main thing in the Vedam. So, in Yagam, how does Yagam works? You've got to know that. What does Yagam mean? Yagam means not setting up a few bricks together and putting fire to it. It's more than that. Yagam means that there are many learned personalities who are spend their whole life in this way of life, Yagam, right? So, Yagam, there are three main, there are actually four, but there are three main activities in the Yagam. The first thing is that inviting all the Devadas to come, whom in that particular Yagam. For example, Adhiratram, Agnishtomam, Vajapayam, Gosavam, there are so many mentioned in the Vedic literature. There is whole books available for that. There is one personality from, I mentioned this before also, from Berkeley, Fred, his name is Stahl, who had a correspondence with Prabhupada. You will find that correspondence in the Science of Self-Realization book, where Prabhupada was talking about chanting the holy name, whereas he has gone and studied all the other Vedic literature, so he was not totally agreeing with Prabhupada about it. he was saying that Vedam is not everything about chanting the holy name only. He said Vedam does cover so many other important topics like the Yagam, he was saying. And he has written that book called Agni after that, based on that. It's a massive book, right? So anyway, that was his, he spent years and years studying this, right? So practically what does Vedam does? Vedam for a Yagam, it is capable with the mantram to invite the demigods to come. All the Devadas can come, including Vishnu, Shiva, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, and many others, Devadas, Ashwini Devas, they will be invited and they will come. And that is the system. So that inviting them to come is that all the mantras for that is in Rigveda. So all the mantras that is necessary to, because that's how Vedam Yagam starts. If you go for a Yagam, to witness the Yagam sometime, if you happen to get an opportunity to go and see, or if you look into the YouTube, they have put clips of that, many Yagams, right? You will see there how to invite the demigods to come. And they will come in the Yagam. They will come. You won't see them. Their presence will be known. They have ways to sense that. Amazing things are in the Vedam, like that. So, those mantram, what is used for inviting them to come, that is what is in the Rigveda. What is in the Rigveda. And the person who will recite this mantram in the sacrifices is called Hotava. There are four people. Hotava, Adhuryu, Udgadav, Brahman. That is also corresponding to the four Vedas. So the person who invites the Devadas to come, we will use the word Devada rather than demigods. Demigods doesn't actually give a different impression altogether when you say the word demigod, right? But we have no other English word. So we'll use the word Devada. Devada means that Devadas are Krishna's different body, actually. Like all our senses in our body, they are the place where they are present. All Devadas are present in our body. Like, you know, in the Bhagavatam it is spoken, right? Brahma is there, the sun is there, the moon is there, the air is there, material elements are there. They all are Devadas. So all these Devadas are invited in the sacrifice through chanting the mantram in the Rigvedam called Riks, and that is done by the Hotav. Hotav is the person who does that, right? And so practically you can say it is the whole Rigvedam belongs to Hotav. Hotav's Vedam is Rigvedam. You see? Hotav's Vedam is Rigvedam. It is his Vedam it is. In the Yagam, you will see the four sides they will be sitting. So Hotav is the person, first he invites some of the, like Krishna performed, Yudhishthira performed the Rajasuyam, isn't it? How long did it last? 17 months and 17 days it lasted. So imagine to chant the mantra for 17 months and 17 days. How much memory they must have had, the people who were chanting. So such qualified people were available then. And that too, without fault you have to chant. And they all came, Krishna received them all. Krishna washed their feet. And he, because he was in charge of the reception that day. Yudhishthira gave the reception job to Krishna. Krishna says, what do I do? Yudhishthira says, I don't know what to ask you, he said. Because he is the one, actually Yajamanan is Yudhishthira. So Yudhishthira said, anything, whatever you like. Krishna said, I will take up this service of receiving all the great persona. All the rishis came. Krishna washed all their feet. Personally, he washed all of their feet. It may be surprising to us, isn't it? We will think, oh, Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why should he wash others' feet? We may ask like that. Why is that? Because in him, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer is not there. For him, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer is not there in him. So any karma won't have any impact inside him. Ahankaram is not there. So that is the reference. So So that's another story. We'll go into Rajasuyam later. But Rajasuyam is one of the sacrifices like that. Like that, many, 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 many sacrifices. We can't even speak about all them because the list is so endless for various ways. Like Dasharatha Maharaj performed Putragameshti. Remember? Putragameshti he performed for having a son. And who was doing all that? He called, Dasharatha called Shanda and her husband Krishishringa came there. Isn't it? So Krishishringa performed. All the rishis are trained in all these things. They had so much knowledge about all this that they could perform these sacrifices well and get the result what the kings wanted. Putragameshti Yagam, what Dasharatha has done. Similarly, you also see a Prithumaraj performed so many sacrifices. Ashwamedham. So many Ashwamedham. Ashwamedham is one of the best in the Yagams because to remove a lot of sinful activities, all Kshatriyas perform a lot of sinful things. Because they are the administrators, the rulers. So they will get into a lot of problems in their administration. So generally you will see many of these kings, they performed many Ashwamedham. Yudhishthira performed 3 after Mahabharata war. Because Dhaumya and Vedavyas told him, perform Ashwamedham. So 3 Ashwamedham our Yudhishthira performed. Mahabali performed 100, isn't it? 100 Ashwamedham. And then who else? Prithu performed 99. 100th one, Indra came and blocked it. Remember, because 100 if you have done 100 Ashwamedham, you can become Indra. This is how bona fide the whole thing is. I mean, the power of the Yagam, I'm saying. So it is that Yagam we are talking about. And in that Yagam, Hodava is the one whose Vedam it is, Rigvedam. Right. So, you have invited all the demigods to come and they have come now. For the sacrifice, right? Once they have come, what do you do the next? Just like you invite somebody at home, you give them some nice prasadam, isn't it? For a guest. In the same way, those who have come, they have to be given full attention. And they have to be offered everything. That's the offering. What is called the... everything is through mantra. It is not the material that matters. Material may be small. It may be ghee or it may be some other things, right? Whatever that is offered. There is rules for all that. There is rules and there is details available for all that. For every yagam what is required. That means if you want to conduct one proper yagam in 2-3 years time from now, 3 years, you have to start preparing now. Sourcing all the ingredients what you need, require, and you have to have the whole list ready for everything what you require, and you have to have people who knows about it. So it is a big endeavor, and there are a lot of restrictions attached to your that time how you spend. You're not allowed to live a life of lavishness or sense enjoyment, nothing, everything is prevented. And it's not only the Yajaman's wife also. Both are involved. So these are families who have been doing it for generations and generations. And it stayed with them. Because it's not possible for ordinary people to take to these things. This has to happen only in a very structured society. Very structured society only this will work. This won't work in a society like ours. International society won't be able to do this. These things cannot happen. It's not possible. So this is where it's coming from. So here you see that the persons, the devadas that have come, they have to be what their havisa, the one that is offering made to them is called havisa. That havisa with the proper mantram is offered in the fire. They eat through the fire. The fire is their face, the mouth is the fire. So the havisa is offered into the fire. And that fire and the mantram that you chant while offering the havis in the fire varies from one devada to another devada. Another devada, right? So the mantram that is used for that is called Yajurveda. You see? Yajurveda. So Yajurveda is the Vedam of this person who is offering all the havis into the fire. All the havis into the fire. And he is called Adhuryo. സോ ഹോതാവ് ഈസ് ഋഗ്വേദി, അധുരിയുസ് മന്ത്രം ഓർ ഹിസ് വേദം ഈസ് യജുർവേദം. അധുരിയുസ് വേദം ഈസ് യജുർവേദം. റിമെമ്പർ ദീസ് വേർഡ്സ് ആസ് ദേ ആർ, ഇറ്റ് ഇസ് ദ ബെസ്റ്റ് തിങ് റാദർ ദൻ ലുക്കിംഗ് ഫോർ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് ട്രാൻസ്ലേഷൻ ഓർ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് ഇക്വിവലൻസ്. യു വോണ്ട് ഗെറ്റ് ഇറ്റ്, ഇറ്റ് ഇസ് നോട്ട് ദേർ എനി മോർ. ഈവൻ വട്ട് ഇസ് ഹിസ് നെയ്മ് സ്റ്റോൾ ഹാസ് യൂസ് ദ സെയിം വേർഡ്. Because there's no this doesn't exist anywhere else except in the Vedam. Where else you will find all this understanding, right? So so through the havisa, what is offered into the fire by the adhuryo is yajurvedam. Mantrams are all in the yajurvedam. Havisa is offered into the fire and he is offering everything as this food to the invited guests, devadas, right? Then after that, after they are satisfied with the offerings what you have made to them, what do you do next for a guest? You speak to them nicely, isn't it? It's exactly like a guest you invite home. I don't know, these days it's all different. You invite a guest, you say, why have you come so early? People say like that. So here the principle is that you invite, so invitation is proper, then offering prasadam nicely, also there is rules, and then after that you have to speak to him nicely, and that is stuti, glorifications, right? So stuti is all musical, stuti is always musical, right? And that is samavedam. That's why samavedam is the musical side of it, and through music you glorify the invited devadas. Glorify them through studies, and that is Samavedam. And that Ritvik who does that is called Udgadav. The one who does that is called Udgadav. So you have got Hodav, whose Vedam is Rigvedam. Then Adhuryu, whose word is Yajurvedam. And then you have got Udgadav, who glorifies them. He is called, his Vedam is Samavedam. So Hodav, Adhuryu, Udgadav. Three. We'll keep it the three at the moment. We'll come to the fourth a little later, because fourth one is a little different. So this is the main message in the Vedam. 80% of the Vedam is this Yagam. 80% of the Vedam is Yagam. So naturally Vedavyasa Maharshi had to think all these things. He could not just say that all these things are not important in the Vedam. It's there in the Vedam, and he is trying to make it as accessible as possible to the society in the Kali Yugam. So this was taken seriously right up to recent times. Probably you could say even up to Mahaprabhu's times all this was very much in practice, although it started disappearing gradually due to influences from other cultures and other effects from the world, right? But otherwise, traditional society followed these things rigidly, and this was in practice. And you will see the reminiscence of that you can still see in India. In different parts of India, different Vedam has become practiced. They studied. And that is unusual places you will find certain traditions still existing there, where there is not too much industrialization and too much of modern influences. It's not in Bombay, Calcutta, Delhi, Madras or anything. It is in places, in some villages, in some states. You can see like certain parts in the east coast of Andhra. There are specialized personalities there. Only on the east coast, only a small strip there, a few villages they have. There are certain places in the deep south in Tamil Nadu where they have certain pockets where that particular part of the Vedam is still available from personalities who have trained and studied that. Similarly in Gujarat, as well as in Maharashtra, and similarly there is in UP a lot. And like this, but that's all in pockets here and there. And that's where it is at the moment. Even though they have started Vedavada Shala and all that, like many people are trying to do, like the other day you were saying about that one in they're trying to do resuscitate this because they know the value of it. So therefore they're trying to give some life to it before it totally disappears from here. Disappearance means, again, you have to understand, people who know this may disappear, but Vedam doesn't disappear. Vedam is always present in the environment, in the air. But dragging it out from the air, because Vedam is Shabdam, isn't it? Shabda Brahmam it is. So to bring it back again, it will come back again in the Satyayugam. That is the Bhagavadam says the same thing, that Krishna will not allow Vedam to die. Vedam is always there. But people who know Vedam and this tradition in the world may disappear for some time. In Kaliyugam it will happen. People with knowledge of the Vedam. Now you can see in the modern society how many people understand the importance of Vedam? Very, very few. Isn't it? Majority of the people, they are thinking, some of the funny things in the Facebook if you read, it's so funny that some youngster gets an idea, oh, I should study all the Vedam now. So what does he do? He's got an English translation for all this, he says. And he's asking questions about this. He does not understand, by your English translation you can't do anything with the Vedam. Vedam, you got to study Sanskrit. There is no choice there. Translating into English, what will you do with it? So, all these questions, because sometimes young people, they got very enthusiastic, or they want to conquer the world, the spiritual world in other words. So, they take this idea that if I get an English translation, I might make it in a few years. I'll study all the four Vedas and I could become a Vedic scholar. Like we have so many Vedic scholars in this world running around with them. So anyway, it's just funny that the way it is. I'm just saying Kaliyugam will produce all these kind of things. But this is not the original thing. It's different. There is a people who have given not one life, many, many generations to it. It is through them this Vedam has survived. And that is why you will see in that Voice of God book, Paramacharya saying that those families who have protected the Vedam, they should be protected. Because that's our greatest asset in this world. And when that has been rattled and shaken by the influence of the modern industry, and it hurts people. And that is why we have problems in the world. Vedam is for maintaining that balance in this world. Only they know the importance of that. Those who know the importance, they will tell you about it, how important it is to preserve Vedam. Nothing pleases Krishna more than reciting the Vedam. There's so many temples at one time, hours and hours and hours, recitation of Vedam. Now it is limited to few major temples. Like Tirupati, they have put some Vedic scholars to recite Vedam every day for the pleasure of the deity. Nothing more pleasing to him than the Vedam. All other things secondary. Vedam is the first thing. And therefore, only Tirupati and temples like that can afford to maintain them. Because you have to look after them, isn't it? And they have to maintain that discipline in life to recite the Vedam. That's another thing. So, on the basis of Yagam, he has divided like this. Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam. He has taken that also into account while dividing the Vedam. Apart from, you are seeing here, Rigvedam is for the Hotava, and then the Yajurvedam is for Adhurya, and then the Samavedam is for the Udgadav, the one who glorifies the Devadas who had come. Right? So, now, what about Atharvana Vedam, the fourth one? You will understand why I am saying all this. You may think that why it is important. What has it got to do with me? If you start asking me, I can't answer that question. The only thing I am saying is, Srimad Bhagavatam, where is it coming from? This is why I am saying this. Right? So, Atharvana Vedam position is, right? Generally, people have an impression about Atharvana Vedam. That Atharvana Vedam is used for, while installing a king. There is a big ceremony while installing a king. Installing a king is a big ceremony. You remember when Ramachandra came back from Lanka, Pattabhishekam, isn't it? It lasted many, many days. And Vasishtha Maharshi had to chant, has kept that water with the chanted mantra for 14 years. Because originally what happened was Ramachandra was going to be installed as the king. Suddenly this incident happened with the Kaikeyi. By then, the next day he was going to be installed. So months and months before that, the Vedic scholars were chanting the mantra, and they have made the water, chanting this mantra, and collected in the pots and kept it, kalasham it's called. And Kanisham was ready. And when suddenly from out of the blue this thing happened with Kaikeyi, and Ramchandra left to the forest. He kept that water till he came back. Who? Vasishtha. Vasishtha knew the value of that. And Vasishtha and many other rishis who were assisting Vasishtha in installing Ramchandra as the king were very disheartened about that. But it happened. We won't fully understand when you read it as a story the seriousness of the situation, what happened in Ayodhya at that time. That Ramchandra's departure was not a simple thing like that. He was going to take control of the state, and he was going to be installed as the king, and Dasharatha has been dreaming about it, and he just wanted to do it straight away, and suddenly this happened. And then whole Ramchandra was happy to go, and he wanted to meet up with all the rishis, because rishis were very close to him, to his heart. So that's why he got the opportunity to talk to Agastya and Bharadwaj and other main rishis, right? So, so what about Atharvana Vedam? The Atharvana Vedam contains a lot of these mantras for installing the king. And also, there is so many other things which related to Yagam called Shandi Homam. And similarly, Paushtika Karmam. There are so many words, technical words like this. All this is in the Atharvana Vedam. It is in the Atharvana Vedam. And because it is not 100% like the other three, like which one? Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, which is only related to sacrifices to please the devadas from the higher position. Normally some people say that Atharvana Vedam is not exactly like the other three. They have a little different relationship, but that is also not correct. That is the highly learned people's opinion, is that Atharvana Vedam is in par with the other three, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam and Samavedam. It is no way it is under inferior to no way it is inferior to it to other three Vedam. Which one? Atharvana Vedam. This is the way you have to understand that, right? I will tell you why it is so, because they have reasons for all that, right? So, then the other complaint about Atharvana, other impression about Atharvana Vedam, that Atharvana Vedam has got this Abhichara Mantram. You know what Abhichara Mantra means? Black magic. It is the modern ways we say. Or you can say this, what do they call it in English? They call it exorcist or something.
Exorcist.
That thing, whatever that is. Like ghosts, evil spirits, how to get rid of them from when somebody is affected by that, right? Sometimes people do get affected by all that. Brahmarakshasa and all that. So there are mantram for that. They are all in the Atharvana Vedam. But therefore what happened was, people started saying, this is all among the scholars, they started analyzing Vedam like this. And they started saying that this is all Abhicharam. Abhicharam means that motive is not very good. The intention is not good, right? So the intention is not so good, and therefore it is not in same category as the other three. This is how they see it, right? And there is also the sankalpam of himsa, violence, in the Atharvana Vedam. Now, if you have any mantram in the Vedam, depends on what sankalpam you have inside, right? For example, a Gayatri mantram also, it can become an Abhicharam. If you chant Gayatri with the intention of giving trouble to somebody. So it's the sankalpam that is important, more than the mantram you chant. So any mantram, even Gayatri, can become Abhijara mantram. You know what I mean, isn't it? Abhijara means, you understand what I mean. I don't know the English word, but what basically you call it this, all these kind of things. You know, when you try to give trouble to somebody, when you want to destroy someone, that's called Abhijara. When you want to give pain to somebody or give trouble to somebody. So Abhijaram is like that. And with any mantram in the Vedam, you can perform Abhijaram. You can perform Abhijaram. Because if your Sangalpam is like that, even if you chant Gayatri, it will happen. Suppose I chant Gayatri 1,000 times a day. And with this whole goal in my mind, to give a problem to somebody, then it has, even though Gayatri Mandram is considered to be a Brahma Vidya, but it comes to the same situation as the Atharvana Vedam, even though Gayatri is not in the Atharvana Vedam. Okay. So these four things, remember, I was talking about Ritvik, Udgadhav, Advirya, and the fourth one, who does this, which one? Atharvana Vedam. His Vedam, he, the one who owns that Vedam, is called Brahman. He is called Brahman. Now, this Brahman is a very special role in the Vedam. What is that? He doesn't speak. He sits there silently throughout the sacrifice. That's his role. He cannot speak one word. He is very silent. Who? This Brahman. Hodava has to invite. Advirya has to offer. Udgadhav has to glorify. And Brahman sits quiet. This is the four different personalities. They are all called Ritviks. And this is where the Ritvik word came to our movement. Nobody understands where this Ritvik is coming from. It is from the Vedam. This Ritvik word has come into our... We started saying Ritvik means all bogus gurus. We said they're all Ritvik, they are saying. So what to do? What can you do? Imagine the difficulty. The whole message is coming from a much higher level, right? And we pick up one word here and one word there and use it very freely. And he's not getting anywhere. Nobody understands. These people who are, even the, whom we call as Ritvik, they also don't know what they are. This is the difficulty in this whole thing. It's so complicated. When you transfer this understanding of the rishis into our normal life and we make it very, generalize it and universally follow it, right? So these four people are called the Ritviks. Who? Hodava, Udgadhava, Advirya and Brahman. They are called the Ritviks. And that is how it's coming from the Vedam. And that's again we have... So what we have done now, I'll tell you how it has come to us. We have said that you are only performing fire sacrifice while initiating a disciple. So you are a Ritvik, they are saying. This is how they have understood it. Although it has nothing to do with it. But somehow or the other, this identity has happened in this way that those who perform sacrifices are the Ritviks. So therefore, those who perform, perform the initiation ceremony, but not your guru actually. He's only performing your initiation ceremony. So this is how the first 11 gurus in Ishkan, I'm just saying this to see how much we have misunderstood things. The first 11 gurus, they were, the opposing group is saying they are only Ritviks, they are not gurus. In other words, their only job is to perform the sacrifice, that's all. That's what they meant, basically. It is on that issue that the fighting started in the beginning, right? Anyway, that's not important. Let's leave it like that. So, Atharvana Vedam, right? Whose Vedam it is? Brahman. Brahman's word, right? It is his Vedam, this Atharvana Vedam. And therefore, the Atharvana Vedam is also called as Brahma Vedam. Sometimes they call it like that, right? And for Brahman, there is not much activity in the Yagam. He just has to sit there, right? And but Upanishad says it is his silence that makes the yagam a success. It is in the Upanishads. Which one? Chandogya Upanishad. Chandogya Upanishad says, if you get a good Brahman who can sit there throughout without saying one word and without interfering in anything, not getting up or moving away or anything like that, he has to sit there whole time. So you won't be suitable for Brahman. You have to be like that. That's what is expected from a Brahman, right? So they, Upanishad says, Chandogyam says this, that if you get a very qualified Brahman who sits there, observes everything, then if you don't get one, a good one, then the yagam may not be a success. May not be a success. So Brahman is an important ritvik. Even though he is not doing anything, he has no kriya. Kriya means he has no activity to perform, but he is an important part of the yagam. Right? So his Vedam is Atharvana Vedam. So what happened now? We were planning to stop at 10 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah.
Till 10 o'clock. Yeah. I don't know how much time it takes. Yeah. It's a little bit, few more pages. I'll try to finish. Yeah. So what happened was, this four Vedam, what Vedavyas divided, thinking about the Yagam, thinking about the Rikka, Yajusa, Samam, Atharvanam. In this way, look, taking into all account of all these things, he has made the divisions, right? And then he thought, rather than giving everything to one person, I will teach them to four different people. He taught them, four different people. To Pailan, he gave Rigvedam to Pailan. So all Pailas' disciples are all Rigvedis. That's why you will see, if you go into India and see in different places, you ask them, they will tell you which Veda tradition they are. Rigvedis or Yajurvedis or Samavedis or Atharvanavedis. You will find, they will tell you that, which is their tradition. That means you can say that they come from Paila Maharshi. Paila's disciples are all Rigvedis. Paila's disciples are Rigvedis, right? And similarly, all Yajurvedam, he gave it to Vaishambhayana Maharshi. They are all Rishis. Huh? Paila Rishi, Vaishambhayana Maharshi. So he gave it to Vaishambhayana Rishi. And this Vaishambhayana Rishi, he taught his disciples, and they are all Yajurvedis. They are all Yajurvedis. You know, when you are studying Bhagavatam, if you have all this background in there, you will feel a different experience of Bhagavatam altogether. Whereas if you just start studying Bhagavatam completely separated from all other Vedic literature, then you won't know what you are, you won't get that depth of understanding from where it's coming from, right? Similarly, Vedavyas taught Samavedam to Jaimini. Jaimini was taught all the Samavedam. So all Jaimini's disciples are Samavedis. And Atharvana Vedam he taught to Sumandhu. So for Sumandhu's disciples are all Atharvana Vedis. Right. Now, I mentioned before, Vedam also has got another way of dividing. Which one? Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. So therefore, all Vedas have got these four. Rigvedam has got its own Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. Yajurvedam has also got its own Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. And similarly, Samavedam also has its own, Atharvanavedam also has its own. This all, if you want to make a chart or something, then you will know all the names, which are the Upanishads for which Vedam, which are the Brahmanam for which Vedam, which are the Aranyakam for each Vedam, and Samhita for which Vedam. This is all available in charts. If you look into the sanskrit.org, there is a nice website where they are trying to put all the Vedic literatures available into that. Somewhere in Benares, I think it is placed, based on a lot of young, intelligent and learned IT engineers are all helping that, to build that website. For many years it's going on, to collect all so that this won't get lost. But this doesn't stay in the books, actually. It stays in the heart of the scholars. But Anyway, they are trying to preserve it like this. Yeah. Anyway, so Yajurvedam, all Vedam has got one Samhita. Each Vedam has its own Samhita mentioned. But Yajurvedam has got two Samhita, unlike the other three. Yajurvedam is two. One is the Krishna Yajurveda Samhita, and the other one is the Shukla Yajurveda Samhita. Right? Krishna Yajurvedam and Shukla Yajurvedam. And the reason for that is, two Samhitas to come, is because Vaishambhayana Maharshi, who was Vedavyasa Maharshi's disciple, that he got a problem called Brahmahatya. Brahmahatya means that Brahmahatya is a big crime, big offense, for which he has to perform severe penances for that. And this, how did Brahmahatya happen to him? There are two stories related to that. It could be one of them. Which one it is, I don't know. But they are both available. This knowledge is there, that Vaishambhayana Maharshi had to experience this. Two different reasons mentioned there, how he got Brahmahatya. Right? In those days, there was no lighting like this, isn't it? So the rishis were sleeping. And during the sleep or something in the night, while he was walking, by mistake he put the foot on a baby who was sleeping. And the baby died. By mistake it happened. The baby died, right? So, baby didn't die straight away. After a few days, the baby died. So, Vaishambhayana Maharshi thought, I have performed Brahmahatya. He's a rishi, isn't it? So he knows. Obviously, there was not enough lights or something happened in the darkness, and death happened of the baby, right? He thought, I have committed Brahmahatya. So he wanted to perform some atonement for that. And that's all in the Shastram, what to do, everything. This is one reason spoken about it. The another one was, there used to be debates those days among the rishis. Not like our debate in the YouTube, what you read. Their debates were different. The debates were, they were honest people. And if you have been defeated in the argument, they will accept that. That kind of nature they had. All based on Shastram. So he had a debate with somebody in the Vedic literature. And the person who loses it, the understanding is that Brahmahatya will affect him. He will have one who loses him. That's why they won't just jump into debate straight away, unless they are very sure about it. So he entered into a debate with someone, and he has lost it, and therefore Brahmahatya has caught him. This was one of the reasons. So these two reasons are spoken about it. Why Vaishambhayana Maharshi had Brahmahatya. These are the two reasons. There's a book called Amnaya Madhanam. In there it says all these things. So Brahmahatya Dosham and has affected him, and therefore what he did was, he called his disciples, and he had very fantastic disciples, highly brilliant people, highly brilliant, externally intelligent people. You will hear about them. We have talked about one of them in the Bhagavatam. You remember? Yajnavalkya Maharshi. Remember in the 12th canto? You, such person, that was his disciple. Vaishambhayana Maharshi's disciple he was. Yajnavalkya. Right? So this Yajnavalkya, so what Vaishambhayana did was, that he thought about this a lot. He thought very deeply about it. And he told his disciples that you all have to perform some atonement, prayaschittam, for my Brahmahatya, and free myself from that. Right? He told his disciple. Now what you have to remember here is that guru-disciple relationship is actually stronger than father and the son. We may not know that. Normally for us, guru-disciple these days is email relationship. Or you can say it is that different, isn't it? Times have changed so much. But strictly speaking, the relationship between guru and disciple is stronger than the father and the son. Father is only a seminal father. And he has only responsibility till about 5 years old. After that, bringing him the next birth and making him a proper successful person in life is Guru's job. That is Guru's success. Father is concerned, he gave birth to the child. He is responsible for seminal birth. But after the age of 5, once he is sent to Gurukulam to take his responsibility, educating him properly in the Brahma Vidya and make him perfect and successful in life is the duty of the Guru. And therefore, Guru's relationship with the disciple is much more stronger than a father's relationship with the son. This is Vedic times. Vedic, not Kali Yuga. Vedic times. Kali Yuga is different. So, what we have to remember here is, when he said this to his disciples, and the situation is like this, that if disciples can do something for the spiritual master or the guru, that they can do and he will get the result. And that's also provision is there in the Veda. They can perform the duty and he will get the result for that. For example, you can see sometimes Vaishambhayana Maharshi or others, when they get very old, they can't perform certain sacrifices. So they will tell the disciples to do it, and it is as good as the guru has done it. That's how it was taken, right? So, for example, health reasons, if the guru becomes very old, right? So at that time, he can perform the prayaschitam, and he will get the result. Similarly, disciples do this for the guru, and guru will get the result. So, he called all his disciples and told them that something has to be done, prayaschitam has to be done for my brahmahatya, what I have done, right? So, among all these disciples, one of the important disciples was this Yajnavalkya, right? Yajnavalkya, and he is also very qualified, very intelligent, highly qualified person, right? How many Upanishads we got through him? And look at what he has given in the Upanishads, right? Things what you can never imagine in your mind, he has revealed in those Upanishads, right? He's so intelligent he was. Intelligent in the sense, spiritually so powerful. Anyway, so he had a little problem, that he thought himself very important. He thought of himself as important. That happens, isn't it? When you become very highly qualified, and then you become very capable, that does bring some pride in the person. It is unavoidable. It will always happen. Any little skill is sufficient to make a person proud. So that's what has happened to him. So he goes to Vaishambhayana Maharshi and tells him that, why do you bother all others? I'll manage it, he said. I will manage it, he said. And you don't bother anybody. I can manage it, everything. He wanted to do it himself, everything. Right? And he said this to Vaishambhayana Maharshi. So, when Vaishambhayana Maharshi heard that, he felt that Yajnavalkya is not valuing the other disciples properly, not respecting them. He may be intelligent, he may be more qualified, but he should have had the courtesy not to speak like this, not to think of others in a lower way, you know, to speak about them in a lower status, right? So, means that he made them second hand, not as same as his level, right? You have to always remember, a first class guru will, proper guru will see all disciples equal. Otherwise, he is not a guru. Why? He is not able to, these qualifications and all is swabhavam. A proper guru should see the swarupam of a person. He should only see the soul in the person. So if a guru sees one disciple more important than the other, then he is not a guru. He has to see equally everybody, no matter who it is, good or bad, highly intelligent or not. You have to be like that. That's always a mandatory requirement for a guru, to be like that. Yeah. So, here what happened now? Yajnavalkya said this to Vaishambhayana Maharshi, and he told Yajnavalkya You have insulted them actually by saying like this. There is a similar situation in Shankaracharya's life also. The one which was very dull-headed was Thodagacharya. This Thodaga's case was that he was not intelligent like others, right? So other disciples used to say about him, he is very dull-headed, he doesn't understand anything. And Acharya Swamiji didn't like it when somebody said about his disciple, he is dull-headed. But he was highly loyal to him and highly respectful to him, very devoted to him. So Shankaracharya always used to like him very much. One day in Tungabhadra River, in Karnataka, when he was teaching Upanishads to his disciples, he wanted to start the class, but Thodaga was missing there. Thodagacharya was not there. He went to pick up water from the river, from Tungabhadra River. He went there with the pot. So he hasn't returned back. So the other disciples told him, we can start the class, he can come later. He won't understand anyway. In that way, some remark they made. So Acharya Swamiji got very upset about that. And that's why he decided that Thodagacharya should get realized first before everybody else. So sitting here, Acharya Swamiji blesses Thodagacharya who has went to collect the water. And after collecting the water, when he was coming back, he sang this famous prayers called Thodagashtakam. 8 verses. You can find that in the YouTube. Beautiful songs, sung very well, and highest knowledge in there, in that Thodagashtakam. Deliberately, Acharya Swamiji did that to show others that he is not anyway less than you. If Guru's mercy is there, even a very dull-headed disciple can become the most intelligent person. And that depends on Guru's mercy. So Guru's mercy was flowing freely for Thodagacharya. And Thodagacharya wrote that famous Thodagashtakam at that time. Anyway, just stressing this point, Vaishambhayana Maharshi also, in the same way, told Yajnavalkya, you cannot say this about your godbrothers. You can't say that they are anyway lesser than you, because you've developed that kind of mentality in you, and therefore, I don't want you here. This was the punishment, right? I don't want you here. Whatever you have, I'm not taking you anymore as my disciple. I'm writing you off from my list, he said. I have thrown you out, he said. You should leave, he said. And not only that, while leaving, whatever you have studied, leave it behind here. Vomit it out here and go, he said. This Yajnavalkya also is not an ordinary character in the sense that Maharshi is an intelligent person also. He said, if you don't take me as your disciple, I don't take you as my guru either. This was his words. Nowadays, guru-disciple go to the court to sort it out. In them days, they were so open each other in their relationships, I'm saying. They were so open each other that he had the courage to say that, you're not my disciple anymore. Yajnavalkya told him the same thing, you're not my guru anymore. You're not my guru anymore. So, if you don't think of me as your disciple, I don't think of you as my guru. This was his words to him. And our relationship is over. And he walked out. And while going away, he vomited everything. He vomited it, right? So, he said, whatever you have taught me, I have put it in the vomit here. Vomit is considered something like stool, isn't it? So, normally, when a human being vomit anything, that vomit is considered like a stool. So, therefore, here, knowledge has been vomited in this way, right? And when this happened, all other disciples of Vaishambhayana was there. They were seeing all these things. So, they said that we can't eat that. It is knowledge. Knowledge cannot be thrown out. It should be kept. So, what they said was that they took up the form of some birds, the three birds, right? And pigeons like birds, and they ate it. Birds can eat that. It won't do any damage to them. If we eat that, we'll get sick. But they won't get sick, the birds. They can eat that. So they ate that, all of them, right? And they were called Titri birds in there. And that, what they have received like that, And what they have eaten, that vomited by Yavalkya Maharshi, that Vedam, that is called Taittiriya Samhita. It is called Taittiriya Samhita, which is a part of Krishna Yajurveda. Krishna Yajurveda, right? Then our man, what's his name? Yavalkya. We discussed all this in the 12th canto. I don't know whether you remember all this or not. Not long ago, that too. Yeah. So, Yajnavalkya decided, I should have something more than others have got. So he goes to Sun God and performed severe penances to please the Sun God. Right? Naturally, he wanted to find out the secret of Yajurveda. All these Vedam has come through the rishis. They are the media through which Krishna has revealed this to the world. Original Vedam is Krishna's breathing. And that was revealed through the, that is available in the world in the sound form, vibrations. It is there. But to tap that sound vibration, you need to have qualified people for that. Rishis are the qualified people for that. So they managed to tap it from the air, the sound. And that is how the Vedic hymns have come. All these Upanishads are all from that. All the Vedam is come like that. So here, what happened was that he wanted to know, that he knew that Yajurveda had more to what Vaishambhayana has taught him. So he performed intense penances to please Sun God, who got satisfied with him and revealed to him in the form of a horse. Remember? Horse is called, what is called horse? No. We studied this in the 12th canto only a few months ago. Vajasena. Vajasena. If you remember, you go back to verses, you will find this. In the verses, you will find Vajasena. So, all the way, what Sun God did was, he took the form of a horse and came and instructed him. And therefore, horse is called Vajasena. And all the Vedam, Taittiriya, all the Samhita, what has come through him, through the horse, is called Vajaseni. It's called Vajaseni. So, that Vajaseniya Samhita, it is called. That is called Samhita for Shukla Yajurveda, which has come from Yajnavalkya Maharshi. Right? So, remember like this, that Krishna Yajurveda, Shukla Yajurveda, two different departments in the Yajurveda itself, accordingly two Samhitas also. Krishna Yajurveda Samhita and Shukla Yajurveda Samhita also exist. Right? Then what else? Then Samaveda and Atharvana Vedam, two other Vedams left. Right? So, all Vedam has its own Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Samhita Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. Each Vedam has its own, right? For Rigvedam, there is two Brahmanam, it's called Brahmanam. Two Brahmanams are present for Rigvedam. One is called Aitareya Brahmanam, and the other one is called Kaushidagi. Aitareyam and Kaushidagi are the two names of the two Brahmanams, what is available for Rigvedam. And similarly, there are two Upanishads also for Rigvedam, which is called Aitareya Upanishad, and the other one is called Kaushidagi Upanishad. Right? Aitareya Upanishad and Kaushidagi Upanishad. So, out of these, Aitareya Upanishad and Kaushidagi Upanishad, Kaushidagi Upanishad does not fall into the 10 major Upanishads. You know the 10 major ones? Isha Kena Katha Prashna Munda Mandukya Taittiri Chandokhyam Aitareyam Brihadaranyam. These are the 10 major Upanishads. Why they are major? How did they become major? There are 108 Upanishads listed in the Puranams as well. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada is also listed. 108 Upanishads, right? In these 108 Upanishads, Shankaracharya picked the 10 more important ones and he wrote commentary on that. That is called Dashopanishad, the 10 major Upanishads. And they are this one, Ishak Upanishad, Keno Upanishad, Katho Upanishad, Prashno Upanishad, Ishak Kena Katho Prashna, Mundago Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, Chandukya Upanishad, Aitareya Upanishad, and Brihadaranyam. So, Brihadaranyam Upanishad. So these 10 Upanishads are the important ones. Why is it so important? Because when Acharya Swamiji wrote about Upanishads, he said, Vedam has only one message to the world, Brahma Vidya, isn't it? As far as he is concerned, getting liberated from here is the success of life, not becoming a billionaire here. Getting liberated. And for that you need Brahma Vidya. And Brahma Vidya is spoken straightforward in these 10 Upanishads. Therefore, Isha Kayana Kathaprasna Munda Manduka Taitri Chandokam Aidrayam Brahadaranikam Tada. It says like that. Okay. Anyway, try to remember these 10 Upanishads. It's important because it helps a lot while studying Aidrayam Upanishads also. So here, out of this Aidrayam and Kaushidagi, Aidrayam is in the 10. Kaushidagi is not in the 10. But at the same time, doesn't mean that all other Upanishads are not important. Upanishads are important, right? So what he did was, even though it is not in the 10, many, many quotations from Kaushidagi Upanishad, he has used in his commentaries. Acharya Swamiji has used that in his commentaries in the Bhashyam also. Now, there is a mantra in the Aidraya Upanishad. Prajnanam Brahma. Prajnanam Brahma, right? And this is called the Mahavakyam of Rigvedam. That means, what does that mean? Mahavakyam means, this is the essence of Rigvedam. Rigvedam's essence is this, right? The Rigvedam essence, if you want to understand, if you say, you realize this Prajnanam Brahmam, that means you have mastered Rigvedam, provided you have realized it. You may think, on a Janmashtami day, why I am saying all these things. You will see at the end the relevance of all these things. Connected with Krishna, how it is connected to Krishna. It's not separate from Krishna. Vedam is Krishna's breathing. Nishyasidam, it says in the Upanishads. Krishna's breathing is Vedam. And that's what we are discussing, if you think it like that. So, Prajnanam Brahmam, that is the essence of Rigvedam. Only that's called Mahavakya. Mahavakya means the everything in a sutram form spoken. Prajnanam Brahma means what in English? Consciousness is Brahman. To define Brahman, consciousness is Brahman. That's what it means, right? If you realize that, that means you have mastered Rigvedam. If you have not realized that, whole life you can study Rigvedam, you won't understand anything. This is how it is. So, Rigvedam, if you look into Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishads, everything, the whole essence of all of that is these two words, Prajnanam Brahmam. Prajnanam Brahmam. So, so, if you are able to realize this Prajnanam Brahmam, that means you have mastered Rigvedam. Right. So that means essentially we can say, The whole summary of Rigvedam is Prajnanam Brahma, right? What does that definition is like this? Not limited by time, not limited by space, right? And that pure consciousness, the spirit that is present in the whole manifestation in creation, that's Brahma. That's what that means. Consciousness is Brahman. Chaitanyam, or that living force present in the whole creation, everywhere, without limited by time and space, that's Brahman. And in the same way, who is present inside all of us as our soul, present inside us, right? And in the same way, present all over the world, all over the creation, in the same way. That pure consciousness, Shuddha Bodham. Bodham, it's called. Bodham, right? That Bodham. Chaitanyam, Brahmam. If you have realized that, Prajnanam Brahma, then you have studied Vedam, Rigvedam, properly. Many people say, you want to study one Vedam in life, whole life if you study, you may not be able to get it. You won't be able to get it. Even if you devote your whole life, what a glorious tradition that is. Imagine the wealth of knowledge and literature behind it. And the processes they have given. And what else? So, suppose you have not realized that, that means he has not understood Rig Veda. That's how it is taken, right? Then we have got this Krishna Yajurveda. And the Krishna Yajurveda has got the Samhita, is Taittiriya Samhita. Then it also has got Taittiriya Brahmanam. And similarly, Taittiriya Aranyakam. And similarly, Taittiriya Upanishad also for that. Brahmanam, Samhita Brahmanam, Aranyaka Upanishad. With the name Taittiriyam, the three words it's come, it's called Taittiriyam, right? And out of these 10 Upanishads, out of these 10 Upanishads, major ones, there is one Upanishad which is very important, which you all know, is Kathopanishad, right? That Kathopanishad comes from this Krishna Yajurveda. Yeah? It comes from Krishna Yajurveda. And similarly, there is another Upanishad. Prabhupada has quoted these Upanishads in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam commentaries. You will see, sometimes he quotes from Kathopanishad, particularly Bhagavad Gita. He has to quote, because there are so many verses from the taken directly from Kathopanishad into Bhagavad Gita. Right? And Shveta Ashvadhara Upanishad, there is one Upanishad. That is also from Krishna Yajurveda. Shveta Ashvadhara Upanishad. That's also from Krishna Yajurveda, right? Then Shukla Yajurveda. Yajurveda has told you that to go two divisions, isn't it? So Shukla Yajurveda, it has got its Brahmanam, called Shatavata Brahmanam. You will see, nowadays what's happening is that some devotees wants to know all these things. They just don't have the time or patience to study Sanskrit and go through the proper way. So they're trying to get it translated into English to see what is written in that. Whether they will get the whole message properly, I don't know. But if you look into the Sampradaya Sun, there is one devotee get all these translations done. Shatavata Brahmanam he has translated. And he has put that. Shatavata Brahmanam translations there. But if you read it, you won't make any head and tail of what is written there. Right? Shatavata Brahmanam. And Shukla Yajurveda has also got Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, right? Which discusses deep sleep, deeply, in detail discussing deep sleep, right? Which one? Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And what else? Isha Upanishad, Ishavasya Upanishad. So Brihadaranyaka Upanishad and Ishavasya Upanishad is coming from Shukla Yajurveda. So that itself makes it very powerful, very important Upanishads, right? Brihadaranyam as well as the Ishavanishad. Out of the 10 Upanishads, these two are in that. Which one? Ishavanishad and Brihadaranyam. Both are there, right? And in Brihadaranyam Upanishad is this famous statement which we all want to get to, Aham Brahmasmi. It's coming from there. We all want to be Aham Brahmasmi, don't we? So that Aham Brahmasmi is coming from this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Right? That is the Mahavakyam of Yajurvedam. Just like Prajnanam Brahma for Rig Vedam, Aham Brahmasmi is the Mahavakyam for Yajurvedam. What did Krishna say, Bhagavad Gita? Brahma Buddha Prasanna Atma Na Shochadi Na Kamshadi Sama Sarveshu Bhudeshu Mad Bhaktim Lipade Param. What Krishna is saying is, if you realize this Aham Brahmasmi, after that you will have proper bhakti. Parabhakti. That is the bhakti what Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita. Not people, our sadhana bhakti, with all our material desires. That's not even considered bhakti. So Brihadaranyaka Upanishad talks about Aham Brahmasmi, and Aham Brahmasmi is that realization. If you have realized that, that means you have mastered Yajurvedam. Just like if you have mastered Prajnanam, realized Prajnanam Brahma, you have mastered Rigvedam. If you have realized Aham Brahmasmi, you have mastered Yajurvedam, right? So, then, that means he has understood Yajurvedam, what Yajurvedam means, right? Then we have got Samavedam, right? So, Samavedam has got Talavaraga Brahmanam and Chandokya Brahmanam. And the Upanishad says Chandokya Upanishad and Kaino Upanishad. So, both Chandokyam and Kaino Upanishad, both of them come in the 10 Upanishads, right? Ishakayana Kathaprashnam Unda Mandukya Taitviri Aitareyam Chandokyam Brihadaranyam, that way. So Chandokyam Kainam, Chandokya Upanishad, Kaino Upanishad, both of them comes in the Samavedam. It's the Upanishad, Samavedam Upanishads, right? And you have heard this word Tattvamasi. The Tattvamasi Mahavakyam is the Mahavakyam essence of Samavedam. It is the essence of Samavedam. Why? Because what does that mean? Tattvamasi means? Tattvamasi means the Tattvam inside you is that same Tattvam which is present everywhere. It's not different. That means Jivatma, Paramatma is one. It cannot be two. It's one. Tattvam asi. Tattvam asi. That Tattvam and Tvam is asi, is one, is not different. Right? So that is the Samavedam's greatest Mahavakyam in the Samavedam. Now we have got the last one, Atharvana Vedam. Right? Atharvana Vedam. So Atharvana Vedam has got Gobada Brahmanam. That is the Brahmanam for Atharvana Vedam. But Atharvana Vedam has got two important Upanishads there. They are important. They are both in the 10 Upanishads. So from there you can understand Atharvana Vedam is not anywhere lower than the others. Right? Which are they? Mundaka Upanishad and Mandukya Upanishad. Mundaka Upanishad, if you look, it's only about 8 or 10 verses. One Upanishad it is. Whole Upanishad. But the message through that is very, very, very powerful. It is. So that is why they are included in the 10 Upanishads. Munda Mandukya Taittiriya. Mundaka Upanishad and Mandukya Upanishad coming from the Atharvana Vedam is, and also there is one more Upanishad. All others have got only two. This one has got Prashna Upanishad also. So, three out of the 10 belongs to Atharvana Vedam. So, how could we say that Atharvana Vedam is not as par with others? This is the logic. So, all other Upanishads doesn't have two, three, only two. But Atharvana has got three Upanishads, which comes in the major 10, right? So, at least you must read this. Isham, Kainam, Katham, Prashnam, Mundam, Mandukya, Taittiriya, Brihadaranyam, Chandokya, Maitreya. The 10 major ones we must remember all the time because they are so important. And many, many things in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra, all are coming from these 10 Upanishads. That's why. Brahma Sutram Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote. What is Brahma Sutram? Brahma Sutram is nothing but the summary of Upanishads. That's how it is. We'll come to that. So, and there is another Upanishad called Mahanarayana Upanishad. That is also considered to be a part of Yajurvedam. They consider it like that, right? So, in this way, all other Vedam and other Vedas also that Upanishads are there, connected with different Vedams, right? All this is combined, Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad. All this combined is called Vedam, right? We are talking about Sarva Vedanta Saramhi. So, at least Vedam, you have a general idea what Vedam means, isn't it? Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishad, all together, right? So, and Vedam, in there the Samhita, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, the first three parts, they all lead into the ultimate thing, Upanishad. Upanishad is the important one out of it, right? Because the essence of Vedam is in the Upanishad, not in the Samhita, not in the Brahmanam, not in the Aranyakam, it is in the Upanishad. That's the reason. that this is why it is so difficult to bring out what is Vedam trying to tell us. Like we saw people saying, I'm not able to understand Bhagavatam. What Bhagavatam is saying so many things. 10 different things are spoken, isn't it? Some sarga visarga sthana poshna moodi brahman mandreshanya. But it's exactly what is Bhagavatam's message? What is Vedavyasa Maharshi is trying to, because he's the author, what he's trying to tell us? That's pretty difficult. The same problem exists with the Vedam also. So what he said was that the message of all the Vedam is in the Upanishads. So therefore, Upanishads is called Vedantam. Upanishads is called Vedantam. That means that Samhita Brahmanam Aranyakam and is the first three parts, and in all the essence of all that is in the Upanishad, which is called Vedantam. Right? So Upanishad means essence of Vedam. Basically, if you take it like that, here he uses the word Sarva Vedanta Saram, he says. So Vedantam means Upanishads. And so Sarva Vedanta Saram means Vedam means Brahmanam, Samhita Brahmanam Aranyakam Upanishad. And the Saram of all that is Upanishad. Now this Upanishads, what happened was, Upanishads knowledge, if you have to realize it, you have only one process left there. What is that? Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. That is the process for that. Bhakti is required everywhere. But when you go higher into Upanishads level, it's mostly knowledge and karma. Jnana yogena sanghyanam, karma yogena yoginam. Krishna said that. You remember in the Bhagavad Gita? Don't forget that, because that's such an important statement in the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, if you simply look at Bhagavad Gita, pure bhakti only, the other side of Bhagavad Gita, that is knowledge, which is the main thing in the Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? I'll tell you why it is so important, Bhagavad Gita, which comes later, right? So here, he's saying here, so Upanishads is called Shruti Prasthanam. Shruti Prasthanam. Have you heard this word Prasthanatrayam? Prasthanatrayam means Upanishads, Brahma Sutram, Bhagavad Gita. These three things are called together Prasthanatrayam. Three Prasthanam. Shruti Prasthanam is this Upanishads. Out of that, Shruti Prasthanam is the Upanishads. So here, and the real for self realization, the proper sadhana for the jnanis, because always jnani, you can't write it off, no matter how hard it is. He is a key first person in the Bhagavad Gita, in Brahma Sutram also, as well as in the Upanishad. So therefore, the key process is hearing, reflection on that, and then Nididhyasanam. Right? So, if one qualified for that, devotes all his life to hear this from a proper qualified person, and then he reflects on that, and he discusses with the Guru, and eventually what he got, the conclusion, and if that gets firmly established inside, that is called Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. Right? So, that is called Shravanam Mananam and Nididhyasanam. So, what did Vedavyasa Maharshi do? What Vedavyasa did was, that he found out from the Upanishads, that the essence of all the Vedam is Brahma. That is how he found out this. Satchidananda Brahma. Satta Chitta Anandam. Where did all these words come from? We also use the word very freely, don't we? Satchidananda we say, but do we have an idea where did it come from? It comes from the Vedam. Upanishads it's coming from. So he understood the nature of that consciousness, what we were talking about, pure consciousness. or Aham Brahmasmi, that Brahman, what is its nature? He found out from Upanishads the terminology for that, Sata Chitta Ananda, Sachidananda Brahman, as he calls it, right? So, what he did was, to prove that the conclusion of Upanishads is Sachidananda Brahman, he reflected on the Upanishads so deeply and he created a book, what we call it as Brahma Sutram today. That's how Brahma Sutram has come, which is also called Vedanta Sutram. So this Brahma Sutram, Vedanta Sutram, all this literature, which is called same, and it is the, there is 555 sutrams in there. And you can see that Vedavyasa Maharshi has reflected Upanishads so well. His mananam. He did the mananam on Upanishads and wrote these 555 sutrams called Brahma Sutram. And so that sutram, Brahma Sutram, is called Manana Prasthanam. Upanishads is called Shruti Prasthanam. And this is called Manana Prasthanam. All that he has done in that book, some of you have that book, if you read it, you will see he is discussing Upanishad statements, arguing favorably and unfavorably, and coming to this conclusion that Brahman is Sata Chitta Anandam. You have to prove that, isn't it? So you have to have the support of the Shastram for that. Just because Vedavya said something, it's not acceptable. It has to have the background of the Shastram behind it. Even Vedavyasa Maharshi, if he says something, it will only acceptable if it is based on the Shastram. This is the Vedic strength. Strength of the Vedam. It's not like, oh, because Vedavya said, so it is acceptable. Like we say, Prabhupada said, it's okay. So that's not how you study Vedam. Vedam says, Prabhupada will only say what is spoken in the Vedam. He won't say anything else. That's how it is. So, therefore, the authority is always Vedam. So what he has done, in order to make himself statement, he has to prove from the Vedam, from Upanishads, that Brahman is Sata Chitta Anandam. And he established that in this book called Brahma Sutra. That's what he has done, right? And after he got that, proving that Sata Chitta Anandam is Brahman, then you have to make that fully, deeply established insight in your realization. It has to happen, right? So, with deep devotion and following that process, you have to meditate on this realization, Sachidananda Brahma, Brahma realization, right? And that is called Nididhyasanam. It's called Nididhyasanam, right? So, that Nididhyasanam is Mahabharata. You may not know these things, because Mahabharata you will read looking for the stories all the time, without knowing the spiritual background of the book. Without knowing the spiritual background of the book. And in Mahabharatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi's Nididhyasanam result is Bhagavad Gita. You see? Vedavyasa Maharshi's Nididhyasanam is Bhagavad Gita. Is Bhagavad Gita, right? So, that is why it is called Shruti Prasthanam, Manana Prasthanam, Nididhyasana Prasthanam, and that Nididhyasana Prasthanam. So, this way, Upanishads, Brahma Sutram, Bhagavad Gita. These three has come together and they all collectively is called Prasthana Trayam. Prasthana Trayam. And that is the foundation on which whole Vedic philosophy is based on. Shankaracharya followed that. Ramanujacharya followed that. Madhvacharya followed that. After these three acharyas who have come others, they had little differences of opinion, so they have added on to it. But mainly, if you go to Oxford or anywhere, wherever they are teaching all Vedantam, everything, mainly these three acharyas' literature is taught. For this reason, that they have followed very systematically Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram, and 10 Upanishads. Nothing else. That's their core literature. Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram, and 10 major Upanishads. it is on their commentaries that there is a difference of opinion among them, based on Dvaitam, Vishishtadvaitam, Advaitam. The differences comes from that. But that is another question. That is not important now. The important thing to realize is that this is the foundation. 10 Upanishads, Brahma Sutram, and Bhagavad Gita, right? So, out of these three, Bhagavad Gita and Brahma Sutram is Vedavyasa Maharshi's creation. Upanishads are not. Upanishads are not coming from Vedavyasa, right? And Vedavyasa Maharshi has taught this to others, and it is only from Vedavyasa Maharshi's literature you have a clear understanding of Sanatana Dharma. You have no other way knowing it. Jiva, Brahmam, Maya, Karmam. Where will you go? Where else will you get this knowledge? Isn't it? So, that is why so much importance given to Vedavyasa Maharshi. Therefore, he is accepted as the Guru and recognized in all possible ways. And he divided the Vedam in this way, what I have spoken before. And he also said that if you study one Vedam properly and realize it, that is sufficient. Even if you study one Vedam and realize it. But even that is difficult after whole life. Right? So, studying one Vedam means not only Samhita, you have to study Brahmanam, Aranyakam and Upanishads also. So, only then you can say, and even to study one Vedam in life is a difficult thing. Many people have agreed with that. Even to study one Vedam is difficult, right? So that means to absorb that meaning of that Vedam, Mahavakyam. Remember what I said? Prajnanam Brahma, Aham Brahmasmi, and similarly, Tatvamasi, all these things, right? So, anyway, leave that behind. So, what happened after all this? He realized that nothing of this is getting through to people. He is thinking in such a high level, and people like us are the customers. So when you sell a product, you need the customer should be able to utilize it properly, isn't it? So he realized the problem straight away. So what he did was, he created this fifth Vedam, right here. And how Itihasa Puranam, all of that is considered together, and how the message of the Vedam, he tried to put it through this literature, right? So all what I'm saying is all there in the Bhagavadam. I'm just only reminding you that it is there in the second canto, spoken in a very, very, very simple way. It's just touched and gone. That's why you won't take notice of it. It's just touched and gone. But this is a little bit more detailed explanation of that. If you look into the second canto, in the 10th chapter, you can see, he started like this. Shushi Shuga Vaja. What? Atra Sargo Visargascha Sthanam Boshanam Udaya Manandaram Ishanyukatha Nirodho Muktirashraya. He begins like this. Now, one who reads that, he does not understand what is this 10 subjects discussed in this book. You may ask that question, right? And then at the end he also said, in that first few verses are very important in the 10th chapter of the second canto. He says, Deshamasi Vishuddhyartham Navanamiha Lakshanam Varnayena Shudena Arthena Janjasa, he says, that verse. Remember? Varnayena Varnayendi Mahalmana Shudena Arthena Janjasa, he says. Shudena Arthena Chanchasa, he says, isn't it? Yeah. Deshamasya Vishuddhyartham Navanamiha Lakshanam. Now, only if you understand all this background, those two verses you can understand properly. Otherwise, it's difficult, right? So, what happened here was that in Bhagavadam, he said, 10 topics are discussed, right? And first of all, bear this in mind, that the essence of Vedam is in the Puranam. That is accepted. He wrote Puranam to get the message of the Vedam, right? And Vedam means what? What is Vedam telling us? Brahmavidya, isn't it? Brahmavidya. That is Vedic knowledge means Brahmavidya, right? So, Brahmavidya means there are three important things in the Brahmavidya. One thing is the Tattvam, Brahma Tattvam. What is Brahma means? That Brahma Tattvam. Then, what is Brahmam's glories, Mahima, or what is the various important aspects of Brahman. When Brahman we are talking about, like in the other religious processes where you talk about a person, that is not how Vedic literature presents to us. For us it's knowledge. Knowledge matters, not person matters. Person is matters in the sense that we accept personality only to that extent to support the knowledge side of it. To ultimately, the goal is to realize the truth. To free from the body, isn't it? To get out of this ignorance inside us, I'm this body. To come out of that. So what has happened is that Brahman, Brahma Tattvam, Brahma, the glories of Brahman. What is the glories of Brahma means? Glories of Brahma means, remember what Krishna talks about Vibhuti, Vibhuti Yoga. What did he call it as the opulences? Opulences of the Absolute. In the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Bhagavatam. They are all the glories of Brahman. And also all the pastimes, Krishna's pastimes, Ramchandra's pastimes, all that is glories of Brahman. Because Brahman is the one who is doing all these things. Then what else? Creation, maintenance, dissolution, srishti, sthiti, samhara. All of that is, and then all incarnations. This is all Leela. All this is Leela. Krishna's Leela this is. Avataram is Leela. Srishti, sthiti, samharam, which is nothing but Maya. It's also Krishna's Leela. Due to that Leela, we are suffering. Krishna's Leela. Srishti, sthiti, samharam, creation, maintenance and dissolution is Krishna's Leela. And we are in that Leela, part of that Leela. Although we feel it too much sometimes, that Leela. Right? So that is the second topic in the discussed in the Brahmavidya means all this. Brahmavidya means first the Tattvam, Brahma Tattvam. Secondly, the Mahima or glories of Brahman, which includes Vibhuti, Leela, and the Srishti, Sthiti, Samharam, and finally Avataram, Krishna's incarnations and their pastimes. All this is part of the glories of Brahman. And finally, the last one, the process of self-realization. Brahma Sakshatkaram, self-realization process, right? All these three things combined together is called Brahmavidya. Is called Brahmavidya. So, it is Vedam, this is the topics discussed, these three important aspects, right? And in Upanishads also it is the same thing, but spoken in a different way. And important things in the Vedam is spoken in the Upanishads. And that Brahmavidya, which is discussed in the Upanishads, these are the three topics that is covered, nothing else. Nothing else outside this, right? So that Brahmavidya, when it came into Puranam, like Srimad Bhagavatam, Shuka Brahmarshi is saying to us, I am describing that through these 10 processes. Two parts, 10 parts. Which are they? Sarga Visarga Sthana Poshanam, Udi Manandaram, Ishanikatha, Nirodham, Mukti, Ashraya. In these 10 different subjects, I am discussing these three things, what is discussed in the Upanishads as Brahmavidya. I am discussing through these, that is that first verse in the 10th chapter, 2nd canto. You see, now, if you read Bhagavatam translation purport, what will you find there? You will find Sargam, primary creation, secondary creation, Visargam, Sthanam, all the, whatever the translation is, Poshanam, Manindram, Ishanikatha. You are not getting the message properly. What is in the Vedam? It is Shuka Brahmarshi's, how do you call it, masterpiece, this is, that he has produced Bhagavatam in a way how he learned from Vedam. Vedavyas actually done this. But Shuka Brahmarshi has followed the same thing. And through these 10 steps of Sarga Visarga Sthana Poshanam Udam Anandaram Ishanikatha Nirodham Mukti Ashrayam, he is teaching Brahmavidya to us in a different style. In a different style. Not like the way it is taught in the Upanishads. Upanishads, it's taught in a different way. But in the Puranam, when it came to Bhagavatam, through these 10 different steps, he is teaching us the same Brahmavidya, what is in the Upanishads. Right? So, So here he is saying here, now, the problem is that in one book, if you read, when you are reading one book, there should be, finally you should be able to say there is one topic in the book, what has the conclusion of the book, right? But if you read Bhagavatam, there is these 10 topics. Which one is important, people ask? These 10 topics are discussed. Which one is important? They will ask this question, right? So, therefore, that is why Shuka Brahma Sri said later, Deshamasya Vishuddhyartham Navanamiha Lakshanam Varnayandi Mahalpanam Shudena Arthena Chanchasa. That verse is written there to tell us the book is not discussing about many topics. There is only one topic that is discussed in this book, but 10 things are discussed. You feel that Deshamasya Vishuddhyartham, out of the 10 topics that is discussed, 9 topics are to help to understand the 10th one. That is, that first line means Deshamasya Vishuddhyartham Navanamiha Lakshanam, he is saying. Navana means the 9 topics. You are studying the 9 topics to understand the 10th topic. That's what that line means. Deshamasya Vishuddhyartham Navanamiha Lakshanam Varnayandi Mahalpanam Shuden Arthena Chanjasa. And that process, he said, ashrayam is the final conclusions. Ashrayam. Ashrayam means completely to surrender to Krishna. That's ashrayam. Ashrayam means there is nothing in this world more important than Krishna. To come to that understanding is very difficult, isn't it? It's not easy to come to that understanding. Krishna is everything. Nothing else here important than Krishna. So that, and to know that, and to take Krishna shelter, and to surrender to Him. Because once you have known that, automatically you will surrender then, isn't it? Once you know, because we do not know Krishna at the moment, we are not surrendering. Once you know what is Krishna, the only option what is then left for the jiva is to surrender to Krishna. He has no other option, because he has understood his relationship with Krishna then. That's what it makes it so important, ashrayam. Ashrayam. And that ashrayam is the goal, Shuka Brahma Sri is saying. And for understanding that ashrayam, all the other 9 processes out of the 10. So, sargam, misargam, if you go like that, there is 10 of them. The last one is ashrayam. What he is saying is, all the 9 is for this one, the 10th one, called ashrayam. Called ashrayam. Right? So, for ashrayam purpose, what does ashrayam mean? Total realization of our position in relationship with Krishna. What are we? That is why at that moment you are completely free from the body. You are finished with this body. You have realized who you are. Your connection with Krishna. Completely you understand who you are. Ignorance has completely gone away from inside. No more identification with the body. No ahanda, no mamata inside, ahangaram or attachment anywhere, and you have realized who you are and you are established there. That is the ashrayam stage, right? So, through these 9 different steps, sargam to ish, manandaram, nirodham, mukti, up to mukti, right? In different ways, this ashraya tattvam is spoken, right? So, so the same ashraya tattvam is the one that is spoken in the throughout the Bhagavatam in different ways in the different cantos, right? So if you ask the question, what is the conclusion of the Bhagavatam? If somebody asks that question, the answer is ashrayam. Ashrayam. Ashrayam is the answer, right? That is why, if you look at the 7th verse in the 2nd canto, 10th chapter, remember? What does it say? Abhasascha nirodhascha. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, abhasascha, that verse, right? So he's saying there that this abhasascha nirodhascha, that what did he say there? One second. Uh, Abhasascha Nirodhascha Yadascha Adhyavasiyate.
Adhyavasiyate.
Sa Ashraya. What is that? Param Brahma.
Yeah.
Paramal Medi Shabdyade. He is Param Brahma. He is Paramatma. Ashrayam of what? That he is the Ashrayam. Who? Param Brahma. Paramatma is the Ashrayam. Right? So we see that Abhasam means Srishti, creation, right? Nirodham means devastation, claim, right? So, Abhasascha Nirodhascha. You may have found all these things a little bit too technical, but it has its own importance. Huh? You will get to understand why I'm saying this later when you come to the end of this, right? So, this is the verse. He put it in the Bhagavadam when he began Bhagavadam, where Janmadhyasayataha. This is the same meaning of that. Janmadhyasayataha, where everything is coming from. Janmam Adi Asya Yataha means Srishti, Sthiti, Samharam. That's what that means. Janmadhyasayataha means, right? So, where did he get that from? Janmadhyasayataha. He took it from Upanishad. In Upanishad, there is a vakyam, a statement. Yetova imani bhutani jayande. It is in the Taittiriya Upanishad. So that verse, statement in the Upanishad, Yetova imani bhutani jayande, he changed that and made it as Janmadhyasayata, where in the Brahma Sutra. It is the second sutram. Out of the 555 sutrams in the Brahma Sutram, first sutram is Adhato Brahma Jijnyasa, second sutram is Janmadhyasayataha. So that Janmadhyasayataha from the Brahma Sutram, he used it in Bhagavadam for the first verse. That is why the first verse in the Srimad Bhagavadam is the most important verse. In that verse, the whole Bhagavadam is there. You will see the commentary on that from Sridhara Swami and all running into many, 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 many pages. Because everything related to what he had to say is there in that verse. Right? So, what it's saying is, from whom this creation comes and in whom this creation is felt. We are experiencing the existence of this creation. But where is it present? It is in him, Brahma. And then in whom? Who eventually withdraws everything back to him? Dissolution. From whom everything comes like this, the world, and in whom only, by whose presence we feel the presence of our existence of all this, and at the end, where it all goes back, to whom it goes back, he is Brahma. That's how that spoken. And that is Ashrayam. That's a shelter, right? Brahma Tattvam is what is discussed in the Brahma Tattvam is what is discussed in the... We'll have another 45 minutes. We'll finish this. Right? Okay. So, Brahma Vidya. Brahma Tattvam is the topic of discussion in the Bhagavadam. Right? So, Sridhara Swami says this, that Gayatrasya Brahma Vidya means that... Sridhara Swami says that Gayatri also is referring to Brahma Vidya, and that Brahma Vidya is in the Bhagavadam. Right? And that is why you see that from Gayatri he took Dhimahi in the beginning and at the end also Dhimahi. Finishes and ends with Dhimahi. Right? Satyambaram Dhimahi, Satyambaram Dhimahi. It finishes there. So, therefore, Brahma Vidya is Bhagavadam and it is known as the name of Gayatri. Right? So, this Ashraya Tattvam, that which is spoken through Sargam, Visargam, and all the other different steps, right? How is it spoken? That is what he is saying here. Shrutena Arthena Chanjasa, which we discussed before. What that means, isn't it? Shrutena means Srustuti and Upadesham. Arthena means Katha. Arthena means Katha. So, Shruti and Upadesham is for Shrutena. Katha means Arthena. So, what Shubha Brahmarshi is saying there is that Shudena Arthena Chanjasa, explained through Shruti and Artham, right? So through these two media, Shruti and Artham, and or Studi or Upadesham, and then the Katha. So it is through these three Upadhi, through mediums, that Brahmat Ashraya Tattvam, through these nine steps, starting from Sargam, Visargam onwards, one realizes the experience of that at the end. At the end. Where is the proof of that? Proof is Parikshit himself. Remember what happened to Parikshit at the end? When he came to 12th canto, 4th chapter, at the end of 4th chapter, that Shukha Brahmarshi realized Parikshit is now ready for hearing the Brahma Tattvam or Ashraya Tattvam, right? So, and the important topic, if you ask in the 12th canto, is Parikshit's realization, isn't it? Brahma Tattvam. That is the most important topic in the 12th canto. Parikshit's getting realized, self-realized. That's the most important topic in the 12th canto. So, that means, Parikshit, who was in a state of bodily concept of life, has moved away from that and realized the self who he is, and he is making the statement, Aham Brahma. Aham Brahmasmi statement he is making there. Aham Brahma Paramdhama, Brahma Aham Paramam Padam, Evam Samichan Alpmanam, Alpanyathaya Nishkale. That statement is nothing but Aham Brahmasmi. It is Aham Brahmasmi statement. So that is the point to prove that these nine stages, nine cantos what he has studied, nine Sarga Visarga Sthana Koshanam Udam Anandiram Ishanikata Nirodham Mukti, all that has gone through Parikshit, and Parikshit realized at the end, Ashrayam is Brahmam. That's what that verse is saying, right? So, what that means is, Parikshit has escaped from the cycle of birth and death. Jananam Maranam, isn't it? That is samsaram. Samsaram means material existence, right? So, Bhagavadam elevates one to come through all this, and eventually, like Parikshit, escape from this material life, material existence of birth and death, how he has escaped. After studying Bhagavadam, that's what is meant, supposed to happen to all of us at the end, right? So, now, when you study, because the goal of Vedam is ultimately liberation, isn't it? You want to get out of this birth and death and another body, material body. You want to draw close this to show. So, main topic that is discussed in the Vedam is Brahma Vidya. And in there, that Brahma Vidya is spoken in the Bhagavadam through Stuti and Upadesham. But through Stuti and Upadesham, spoken directly to you. Whereas, Brahma Tattvam is discussed in the Stuti and Upadesham directly. And that you can see in several places in the Bhagavadam. For example, you will see, Ishopanishad says, Ishavasimidam Sarvam. Isn't it? Ishavasimidam Sarvam. And what does Bhagavadam say? Atma Vasimidam Vishwam. It's the same thing. And that is a studi from Manu. Swayambhu Manu studi it is. So you can see, Upanishad says, Ishavasimidam Sarvam. And Bhagavadam says, Atma Vasimidam Vishwam. The same thing. But Upanishad's language is Ishavasamidam Sarva. So in this way, that Upanishad Mandram, Shiva Brahmarshi brought into the studi. This is not the only one. There are many others like this. In the Bhagavadam, if you carefully study Upanishads and look into Bhagavadam, you will find several places Shiva Brahmarshi has taken the Upanishad Mandram and put into Bhagavadam straight away. Right? So, but all this Mandram is not easy to digest, in the sense that it is directly spoken, therefore it's difficult for us, right? That is the problem with the Studi and Upadesham. Studi and Upadesham. In both of them, Studi and Upadesham, what it is that Upanishad Artham, the essence of the Upanishads, through Vijaram, through analysis, that Brahmatattvam is presented like that. And this is what is in the Shruti Gita. That is what is in the Shruti Gita. And Shruti Gita is known for this reason only, that unlike anything else, it is a stuti. It is. Shruti Gita is a stuti. And therefore, when you read Shruti Gita, you will find it a little bit difficult to it is not like katha, right? But it is very well known. And who are the Shruti Upanishads? Who are these Upanishads? Gopis. This is how the relationship is. Gopis are the Upanishads. Upanishal Sundari Mandalaischa, it says. Upanishal Sundaris are the Gopis, and that Upanishads are glorifying Krishna through this Gita called Shruti Gita. So that's the importance of Shruti Gita. And that is why Shruti Gita is given a lot of importance in the Bhagavadam. And one who can explain Shruti Gita very well and who has understood it properly will have a better grasp of Bhagavadam in that level, right? There is no discussion in that. Other topics, no katha there. No, there is no katha there, right? Similarly, there is other topics in the Bhagavadam, you know, Upadeshams. Which one? Kapilopadesham. It is Upadesham it is, right? Direct instructions. Similarly, Krishabhopadesham, Krishabhadev instructions. And similarly, Sadidevi, instructing Daksha Prajapati in the sacrifice time. Do you remember? Sadidevi spoke to Daksha many things. Sadidevi spoke the truth to him and told him that this is not going to work. Either you offer your obeisances to Mahadeva and surrender yourself, otherwise you are finished, he said. Saying this, she left the body, isn't it? He won't listen. And she left the body. So, Sadidevi's instructions to Daksha is in the similar way. Kapilopadesham, Rishabhopadesham, in the same way. Right? And then you have got Prithu instructing his people. Prithu Maharaj, in the fourth canto. Right? And then, in the same Prithu story, the four Kumaras coming and instructing Prithu. That Upadesham. That's also Upadesham. And then you see Sri Narada Maharshi instructing Prajina Barhis through Puranjanam, Puranjana Vakyanam, right? Then you have got Bharata, who? Jadabharata, instructing Rahugana, Bharatopadesham. These are all Upadesham, right? And then you see in Ekadasha Skandam, Sri Narada Maharshi instructing Vasudeva and Devaki of Niminavayogi Samvadam in the form of Upadesham there. So you will find Upadesham everywhere in the Bhagavadam like this. So many different cantos, different people giving Upadesham there. Right? They are all Upadesham. Right? There, the question was, he wanted to find out the path of liberation. Vasudeva and Devaki wanted to get out of this place. Because you remember what happened, don't you? Krishna told them that this is the end. Dwaraka is going underneath the water. Only then they woke up. Who? Vasudeva and Devaki. They woke up at that moment and they wanted to know how to escape from here. At that time is what we discussed last so many months, Niminavayogi Samvada, is in relationship with that. So that's an Upadesham. Everything is Upadesham there, isn't it? So, and in all these Upadesham, Brahmatattvam is spoken directly, right? In Katha, it's all spoken with, how do you call it? In a way that you can get interested in that somehow, to get yourself attracted to it, right? So the problem with Katha is you have to analyze it properly to get it from there, the message, you have to analyze it, right? And while analyzing Katha, there's always a possibility of making some mistakes. What is that? Because according to your vasana, you will come out with some false conclusions from Katha, which may not, Vaisavyas may not have thought about in his mind. Wrong conclusions can come from that. So, so Narada Maharshi, for example, you will see, Shri Brahma gave Bhagavadam to Narada Maharshi, isn't it? In the second canto, 5th, 6th and 7th chapter, is Lord Brahma giving Bhagavadam to Narada Maharshi. Like Krishna gave Bhagavadam to Brahma in four verses, Narada Maharshi took three chapters, 5, 6 and 7 in second canto. That's how Brahma gave Narada Maharshi Bhagavatam, right? And this situation that Brahma Vidya given by great personalities like that in smaller forms is quite normal, right? So there he spoke about Brahma Vidya is Bhagavatam, right? And Brahma Tattvam, Brahma Vibhuti, and the sadhana process for realizing Brahmam, we mentioned that before. You remember? What is discussed in the Bhagavatam? Brahma Tattvam, then the processes of the Vibhuti, Srishti, Sthiti, Samharam, Avatara Leela, all this is in the Brahma Tattvam, also in the Brahma Vidya, and then finally the process by which you can get there. Yeah, self-realization, all that, right? So, Vastu is the same. Brahma ultimately said to him, to Narada Maharshi, Yatha Harer Bhagavati. This is where gets complicated. Brahma said to Narada Maharshi, Yatha Harer Bhagavati, Nirnam Bhaktir Bhavishyati, Sarva Atman Akhiladharam, Iti Sankalpa Varnaya. This is how he left it. Brahma said to Narada Maharshi, that I have given you the essence. You can expand on that, he said. You can expand on that. But one thing you should be very careful while you are expanding. What was that? By hearing this, how people realize that this living force inside, which is Atma, the soul, Atma Chaitanyam, right? And that is Krishna. How one will develop attachment and bhakti for Krishna in the heart, in such a way you should explain it. Krishna, who is situated within us as the Antaryami, how we will develop attraction for him and develop devotion for him. You can explain this, what I have given it to you, in such a way that it will develop bhakti in the heart. That is the only condition he has put on. Yatha Harer Bhagavati, Nirnam Bhaktir Bhavishyati, Sarvalpan Akhiladharam, Iti Sangalpa Varnaya. With that Sangalpam, you can do it, he said. No problem. You carry on doing that, he said. Therefore, but while expanding, do not speculate on your own things, what is not helping you. If it creates bhakti in the heart, then you can do it. But if it is not, it creates some other understanding, wrong understanding, you shouldn't do that. That is the condition he has put on. That means, without disturbing his bhakti in the heart, simply it should not become for knowledge and renunciation. It shouldn't be in that way. So, who has said this, you know? Particularly Sridhara Swami has spoken. That when you are commenting on Srimad Bhagavatam, all the commentators, he said, that never you should explain that purely from the platform of knowledge. Purely from the platform of knowledge, it should not be spoken. It should not be spoken. But difficulty is this. In certain stories, or in certain descriptions in the Bhagavatam, that this Vedanta Tattvam is hidden in that, in a covered way. It is kept inside, right? And you may have to reveal that while discussing the katha. Like we discussed Damodara Leela, for example. Damodara Leela, remember what we said? Damodara Leela basically is a person who is engaged in sadhana. And in that sadhana process, what all problems he will face and what is the way to proceed further. This is all an indication there. In the Damodara Leela, it's there. But at the same time, you should not think only that message is the important thing. Katha is important. Damodara Leela, why? I will come to that later. That's the conclusion of this. He's saying there that that after saying this Damodara Leela, Shuka Brahmarshi looked at Parikshit's face. And wanted to hear from Parikshit what he has understood from that katha. Right? He looked at Parikshit's face and tried to find out what Parikshit has understood. Parikshit said, if you tell me what you have meant to say by that, then I will understand. I just don't have the brain to understand what you are saying, he said. I only have that much capacity. This was very clear in that verses. After saying the story, this Yashoda Devi and Krishna, Damodar Leela, Parikshit, he looked at Parikshit's face. You can see the way the verses are written. Then he wanted to know from Parikshit what he has understood. Parikshit's answer was, without saying, he started blinking, not knowing what to answer. Means what he was saying was, I don't have that capacity. I'm like any ordinary person, he said. I just don't have that capacity to extract the tatvam from the story what you have spoken. When he said that, what did Shukha Brahma Shri do at that time? He said, he gave the meaning of that verses. And that is why we discussed last class. You remember? Which one? Hey? Yeah, but which verse? I mentioned repeatedly that verse. So that you will remember that verse. Which, let me see the number, verse number. This chapter is 9, 10. Tenth chapter, isn't it? Yes. Which one? Wrong. Not 8, not so early. Much later. 38? No? 38 is the Stuti. It is not in the 10th chapter. That is Nalakavira Manigrava. It's only 9th. The Damodar Leela I am talking about. 9th chapter. So even chapter we are going wrong.
13,
14. Then. No, 21. I said this in the morning so many times. That is only 2 days ago. What to do? Nayam sukhabho bhagavan dehi nam gobika suta yani nam chalpa bhudanam yatha bhakti matam iha. Remember? Remember?
Yes.
Yeah, that's in there. So, you can see, I mentioned that. Why? Because that is the verse Shukha Brahma Shri told to Parikshit. And what that means, what did I say at that time? We talked about Jnani. And he also said here, Yatha Bhakti Matamiha. That is the message, right? That, I'll repeat what I said last class, that the... that materialistic people, they have no access to Krishna. They have abhimanam. Who identify with the body, they have no access to Krishna. First thing, right? Nayam, that's what the first word. Nayam sukhabho bhagavan. That means who are engaged in sense gratification. Living a life simply for gratifying the senses. They have nayam sukhabho bhagavan. They can never get close to Krishna. Impossible, right? Then what did he say? That means people who have no spiritual understanding of life, do not have even a trace of spiritual culture in them, they will find it, for that means completely absorbed in senses and sense enjoyment, for them Krishna is so far away. That is what first word means. Nayam sukhapo bhagavan. Right? Then he said also, Yani Twalpaiva me matam. He also said that, right? He said, Alpa is the Jnani. Alpa. His own Krishna says, soul is the Jnani. The soul is the Jnani. That means, what he's saying here, he said, highly realized Jnanis, who considers that they are not different from Krishna's. Alpa Bhudam. See? Jnani nam chalpa bhudanam means that. I remember mentioned this. Jnani twalpaiva me matam in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, he mentioned Jnani nam chalpa bhudanam. That means Jnani means he has realized who he is. He is one with the Antaryami Krishna inside. He is not different from him. He has become one with him, right? But first of all, materialists have no choice, no hope at all getting closer to Krishna. These jnanis who have become one with Krishna, they will also find it more difficult than a devotee who is surrendering to Krishna. This is the key message of that Damodara Leela. I repeatedly said that. The key message of Damodara Leela is bhakti process is the easiest process than any other process. And Yashoda Devi, without studying any shastram, without studying any Upanishads or doing any kind of sadhana, she succeeded in getting to that state of yogi who has to give lifetime after lifetime to get there, to show the importance of bhakti over all other processes. That is the message of Damodara Leela. You see, that's how Shukha Brahmarshi has spoken. That is why at the very end he is saying this of Damodara Leela. You notice that? He says, Nayam Sukhabo Bhagavan Dehinam Gobika Sutha Jnaninam Chalpa Bhudanam Yatha Bhakti Madhamiha. Shukha Brahmarshi is a jnani. Remember that? He is a jnani and he is saying this. He said, this what Yashoda has done is a wonder. Because he knows the struggle with the jnanam. And that is why he was able to say this, so openly to declare this. And now Parikshit understood Damodara Leela. That bhakti is the answer to the problem. And he said that even jnanis won't get to Krishna easily like the way Yashoda Devi has done it. Right? So therefore, there is no other process as good as bhakti to come back to Krishna. Jnanis also will get back to Krishna. But they are not like the materialists. Materialists won't make it. They will continue cycle birth after birth after birth, right? Materialists are so far away, the sense gratifiers or karmis or whichever way you want to call them. Whichever category you put them. Basically, that they have no faith in the Shastram or in Krishna's words, right? Jnanis will take time. They will need time. It won't happen in one lifetime, several lifetimes. That's what he said in the Bhagavad Gita, Aneka Janma Samsiddhim Tebi Yadi Parangadim, right? So, in many lifetimes, sadhana process, a jnani comes to that realization, right? But devotee can make it quicker than that if he develops that surrender. Surrender is the key. But that surrender to happen, Krishna's mercy is required. And effort from our side also, both, combination of both, right? So, this glory of bhakti is what is spoken in the Damodara Leela. Damodara Leela, right? So, that simply through love, Yashoda Devi tied Krishna in her heart. Krishna couldn't escape from that, right? So, and after she has tied him with the rope of bhakti, then Yashoda, Krishna could not get out of her heart. It has become so difficult, right? So what it is saying is, by surrendering Sharanagari and Prabhati, and one who has taken surrender to Krishna like that, purely through love and devotion, that person, when he ties Krishna in his heart, Krishna won't leave him again. Once for all stays there. And Damodara Leela is the message is this, through the Damodara Leela. Right? So Damodara Leela, that it is like this, that continuously in one's life, if with a lot of love and devotion, if you take Krishna very seriously and surrender to him, and all the time if that smarana builds up about Krishna in the heart, then then Krishna will never disappear from the heart. That means the smarana or memory of Krishna has to become so strong inside for that, right? So, what did we hear from Bhagavatam now? That this continuous smarana, we talked about this before also, isn't it? If one can reach that self-realization. That is why, you remember, when Shukha Brahmarshi started Bhagavatam, the first thing he told Parikshit is, Tasmal Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Haririshwara Shrodavya kirtidavyascha smartavyascha chadabhayam. That one line. That is, those are verses spoken in the beginning. When Shobhramarshi came and sat down, this is the sixth or seventh verse he spoke. Remember? That Variyaneshada Prashna. That's how he started. And then he said that the small Bharata Sarvalma. I mentioned to you before, every great personality, when they speak, what they have to say, they will say first. And then they will expand on that, and then they will summarize it. Right? So, the first introduction verse, that is, Tasmal Bharata Sarvalma Bhagavan Hari Ishwara Shrodavya Kirtidavyascha Smartavyascha Chadabhayam. That's it. Finish, the business is over. He says to Parikshit, right? He started like that, right? So, whole of Srimad Bhagavatam is for what purpose? For Smarana, to remember Krishna all the time. And for that, you require Bhagavatam. You have no other way. Without that, you can't remember Krishna. Constantly. If you forcefully remember, it won't stay. It will stay for 10 seconds or so. And then Krishna is gone. But through Katha, Upadesham Stuti, you can establish him in the heart. And that is the process. And finally, when that Krishna is established strongly in the heart, then the mind, which has developed that bhakti in the heart, that will go and surrender to Krishna. He will not come out again from Krishna. Mind has come from Krishna, it will go back to Krishna again. It will go back to Krishna again. So, and therefore he said, I will now tell you Srimad Bhagavatam, which was given to me by my father, Vedavyasa Maharshi, and saying that he sang Bhagavatam to him. And by these 7 days, continuously speaking Bhagavatam like this, this smarana inside of Parikshit kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger, day by day. It was getting stronger. And in the end, when Shubhabrahmashi looked at Parikshit, he started seeing that Parikshit had no chance to forget Krishna in such a way it was spoken. And by the end of the 4th chapter of the 12th canto, he understood that his mind has gone. Already has gone and dissolved in Krishna. The mind has gone and dissolved in Krishna. And therefore he understood. Shubhabrahmashi could see all this. He's a jnani, isn't it, at the end. So, when at that moment, Bhagavad Tattvam was given to him. And that is that 5th Brahmavadesha chapter. And that means, only when the mind completely gets purified, means there is no mind inside. It is so pure that it goes and dissolves itself in the Antaryami inside. At that moment, Aham Brahma Param Dhamma Brahma Aham Brahmam Padam, which is nothing but Upanishad statement, was given to him, and Parikshit was realized. And Parikshit Maharaj, after that, what does that mean? Parikshit is saying, I have realized myself, the soul, as Krishna, not different from him. Aham Brahma Param Dhamma Brahma Aham Paramam Padam. That's what that's saying. Right? So, that means you have realized the self, yourself as Krishna. Krishna himself as your very self. So, Swarupam, it's called. So, one more last thing. That this Ishtamurti, I mentioned before, Sagunam Nirgunam, you remember? That in that, the real Sagunam is not complete with Nirgunam. And Nirgunam is not complete with Sagunam. You have to have both. Only then you can say your realization is complete. The difference was that Sagunam, say for example, when the mind goes, say about 80-90%, the mind is finished. Now our mind is full of vasanas and thoughts and impressions and prarabdham and everything. But about 90-95%, you have seen Krishna in the heart. You started seeing Krishna in the heart, right? As Antaryami inside. So, that will happen when your mind is about 90-95% pure, right? Or you can say 90-95% the mind has become inactive. It's not acting anymore. Now our mind is very busy, isn't it? It's very active. But after some time, realization comes, the mind will start quietening down. It won't run after things in this world. Self-satisfied, as they say, isn't it? Or establishing the self. About 90-95% when it comes, you will realize that Antaryami is Krishna. That realization will come. Antaryami is Krishna. That realization will come. But when it becomes 100% realization, the mind goes, at that time, you will see Krishna is a self. Not different. Up to 99%, you will that means the first is a sagunam. Sagunam Brahmam. The second one is the Nirguna Brahmam. So sagunam and nirgunam. And your realization is complete when you have realized both. Sagunam and nirgunam. And the result is this both sagunam nirgunam realization is Bhagavadam. Is Bhagavadam. So this Leela in the Bhagavadam, the holy names in the Bhagavadam, chanting the holy name, continuously studying it, listening to it, hearing it, chewing it, mananam, all that, and keep on keeping that strong inside, and that is what it will lead into. If one does that, constantly doing that, right? And it can happen by mananam of the stuti. You can do the stuti mananam, and people do in different ways. Different people do different ways. Some people through the study, study, some people through Upadesham, some through the Katha, in this way. So, but mananam is necessary, right? And somehow or the other, remember Krishna that way. Remember Krishna that way. Uddhava did that, right? Uddhava didn't hear Bhagavatam, but what he did was, he stayed with Krishna all the time. That's what he did. He didn't leave Krishna at any moment. Whole life he spent the time with Krishna. Right? So, in that way he remembered Krishna all the time and he could not forget him at the end. And this glory of this bhakti process is Damodara Leela. Damodara Leela. Right? So, that glory of Brahmavidya's essence, the essence of this Brahmavidya, and that is what is spoken through this all these stories to the Upadesha and everything, Almadatvam, Brahmadatvam, that it is difficult to explain the Atma Tattvam or Brahma Tattvam in Katha. Katha, you can't discuss that. Therefore, Katha has to be analyzed and extracted from that. Brahma Tattvam and Atma Tattvam. Atma Tattvam or Brahma Tattvam. You call it in either way. Same, right? So, this is how Katha should be studied in the Bhagavadam. So, in this way, Stuti, Upadesham, Katha, through these three processes, Brahma Tattvam or Ashraya Tattvam is spoken in the Bhagavadam. So therefore, the 10th topic is Ashrayam. Or Ashrayam means what? Ashraya means experience of that, inside, right? Anubhavam, experience level, right? And that is what the 12th canto is. That's what he was saying here. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimal Bhagavadam Ishyate. Then, Tadrasyal Amrutatruptasya Na Anyatrasyal Radhi Kochil. Do you understand now what he is saying? He is saying here that the Vedam essence is Upanishads in the Vedam, right? And Upanishads, what is discussed is Brahmavidya. And that is the message of Vedam, the Sarap, right? That and that Brahmavidya is called Vedanta, another word, right? So Brahmavidya is spoken in the Upanishads, and that is the Vedanta Saram. So this Brahmavidya or Brahma Tattvam, what is spoken in the Upanishads, is called the Vedanta Saram, right? So Bhagavadam is Upanishad Artham, the essence of Upanishad. So Upanishad Artham is spoken in the Bhagavadam. Therefore, essence of Upanishads is Bhagavadam. And the Brahma Tattvam or Paramatma Tattvam, what is spoken in the Upanishads is what is in the Bhagavadam. That is what that verse is saying. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavadam Ishyade Dadrasyala Madadruptasya Nanyatrasyal Radhikochil. What he is saying here is that that the Srimal Bhagavadam, once you have attached to it, you won't have any taste for any other literature in this world. Very categorically he is saying there. Who? Sudha Goswami. He is saying there, Tadrasyal Amradruptasya Na Anyatrasyal Radhi Kochil. You won't have any attraction for any kind of knowledge in anywhere in the world. Because you hit the truth. Tadrasyal Amradruptasya Na Anyatrasyal Radhi Kochil. Remember when we discussed this before in the Agadisha Skandam, Krishna said this, that one of the problem what we have is that all the time we are thinking, I need to know something more. Isn't it? It's called a chikirsha. The word used is chikirsha. Chikirsha means, whatever knowledge, understanding I have, is not enough. I'm still thinking, if I go somewhere else, I will get something better. There is something more to know. This is in our mind in a very deep level. We don't get it. So we keep on searching, searching, searching. That whole spiritual life is search only, isn't it? We search in the internet, we search in the Google, we search in the books, we search through the gurus, we search through the different institutions. We are always searching. Sometimes we try one institution. If it doesn't work, we go another one. We try that. But what he's saying here is, Tadrasyal Amradruptasya. You are totally satisfied. Na Anyatrasyal Reti Kochel. You will stop your inquiry at this point, once you come to that, right? So, and what that happens is there. So, he's saying that, you remember this word, Srimad Bhagavad Akhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. Have you ever thought about the importance of that statement? What he's saying here is that Bhagavadam is not a book. Bhagavadam is not a book, right? It is Krishna himself is Bhagavadam, right? Shabda Brahmam, Krishna sound vibration. That means in every letter and in every word in the Bhagavadam, there is Krishna in that. That is why you will see that while reciting Bhagavadam, why they give so much importance to it, not to make mistakes while reciting, is this reason. Every letter in the Bhagavadam is Krishna. It is his sound manifestation, this is Bhagavadam, right? So, and this is understood by people. By whom? Who have recited Bhagavadam whole life. Many, many people have said this, that you cannot make a mistake there. Reason, because he says there that through Shravanam Kirtanam of Bhagavadam, that it is not a book. Bhagavadam is not a book. They themselves say this, that you understand that Krishna is present in front of us as the Srimad Bhagavadam, manifested, right? For example, they say that when your mind is very, very disturbed, for some reason, whatever it is, take Srimad Bhagavadam and read one or two chapters. You will see the mind surrendering there. The disturbance is going away. This is why people say that. They have this experience, and many, many people have said this, that when your mind is, this is one of the known example of this, right? You will find Shanti, Samadhanam, or peace coming to the mind. And many people have said this, who are reading Bhagavadam regularly. Everybody gets problem in life. They are not, that's not that they don't have problem from life. You know that problem is for everybody here in this world. Any Mahalpa also has got problems. But only difference is, they know what to do when they get problems. We don't know what to do when we get the problem. When we get the problem, we go charging full steam. We won't take Bhagavadam. But what do? They take Srimad Bhagavadam and read Bhagavadam, one or two chapters, according to how much they feel the necessity, and something will come from the Bhagavadam and clear their mind. Because only due to ignorance one suffers in this life. Shogam moha bhayavaha, said in the beginning, isn't it? So shogam moham bhayam, all this is our material diseases, what we get from this world. That's what we get from this world. Shogam moham bhayam. So the solution to that is to read Srimad Bhagavadam. And that's what he said, right? This is not a it's not hypnotizing people by saying like that, right? So this is people's examples. There's so many people have said this, and that is why people are still reading Bhagavatam. It is the reason behind it. Because if you have got a taste like that, and you started realizing Krishna is present in front of me in this book, in Srimad Bhagavatam, and there is something which I don't know what it is, Krishna will give you the solution. It'll come. Solution, not solving a problem, but bring that peace inside by true knowledge. That will come. Right? So, nanyatrasal retikochil. And after that, you won't have any interest in any other things once it has happened like that. I have spoken to you about a personality who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam a lot in Kerala before. Varagunam Vasudevanambudiri, right? He had a lot of problems in his life. You may think that, oh, he was having a great time just speaking Bhagavatam and wandering around. No, he had a lot of problems in his life. He had health problems, financial problems, so many problems he had. But he was such an expert with Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever he had distress, if he takes Srimad Bhagavatam and starts speaking, all his problems are gone with that. In one instance, when he... I'm not saying all these things just to make you believe something. These are all spoken by so many people. And that is why they are still sticking to Bhagavatam. Because they know that the medicine, actual medicine for the problem is Bhagavatam. Right? So it mentions that what is spoken in the Vedam, Brahmanam, Samhita Brahmanam Aranyakam Upanishad, that same message has flown through and came out in the form of Bhagavatam at the end. In one instance, he went to Bombay to speak. You are talking about early 1950s. You can imagine those days how it was. People were more Krishna conscious, I have to say. But only difference was they didn't have the transport facilities like today, communication facilities like now. You know, we didn't have WhatsApp and Facebook and all video clips and all. Therefore, they had enough time to sit and think and read and think about things. So they were more deeply absorbed in the book, not on the surface like us, very much deeply absorbed in things. So he went to Bombay. He had a Shanmugananda Hall, a big hall in Bombay. He had a big program there, right? That means he had to travel by train from Kerala all the way, right? And there were not many trains. There was only one train or something, which would go through Chennai and then to Mumbai. That is how it was those days. There was very, very few trains. Now there is a 10, 12 trains every day going to Bombay through this line, that line, everything. And the plus flights also. So it was a totally different life they had. Simple life, but they had to go through that. So he traveled to Bombay and he spent a week speaking, week or 10 days in Shanmugananda Hall. He spoke Bhagavatam. And he had a big reception. And some royal family, I don't remember which one it is, has awarded him with... because once he starts speaking, his influence on the audience was such that they were completely carried away by his presentations, right? So anyway, he spoke, and then after the program was over, the organizers of the program wanted to take him to important places like Vrindavanam, Mathura, and Kashi, Haridwar, Rishikesh. Because those days, going to all those places was considered to be very difficult. There was not many trains and travel facilities. Now it's only just you have to book the tickets. That's all, you are there next day. Isn't it? We don't feel the importance of... But in them days, you are talking about early 1950s, right? So he had to... They have arranged a ticket for him to go to all these places by train. They have booked everything and told him that we would like you, since you have come all the way to Bombay. Going to Bombay from Kerala was considered to be a long distance then. So they asked him to go to all these places and arrange somebody to go with him to these places. What did he say? He said, I don't need to go anywhere now, he said. This Bhagavatam, he said, showed it to him. Everything, Haridwar, Hrishikesh, Badrinath, Vrindavanam, everything is in this, he said. He said, I don't need it. As long as this is with me, I am safe, he said. And he returned. He didn't do anything after that. We'll stop there today. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.